This is Dr. Stan here at the Genesis Communications Network, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and, well, hopefully today they're going to be the views of Bob Chapman. Bob, are you there by any chance? Well, I guess, hello? Is Bob called in yet? All right, fine. Well, hopefully they're not going to just be my views, because if they are, why, you're going to have to call in here at 800-259-5791. That's 1-800-259-5791. But all right, now maybe we can talk a little bit about what's happening. Apparently, the stock markets around the world have collapsed, and they're falling. And some of them are down dramatically, 5, 7, 8, 9%. The Indian market is down. The Shanghai market's down. The Hong Kong market is down. I don't know about the Chinese market. Certainly our market, as you know, fell the last 2 days of last week and was down today. Of course, our market is just totally manipulated by the plunge protection team. But be that as it may, big things are in the wind. Now, Bob, are you there?
No, I am not here, but I will be here, and I am here now.
Okay, fine. What do you think about the world stock markets for today?
Well, first of all, it's nothing that you and I did not expect.
Of course not. But the thing is that for the average individual, they have no idea why all these things are happening or even why we're really... the whole financial system is melting down.
Well, maybe they'll start listening to programs like yours so they'll understand what's going on out there. And, you know, we've been preaching for years different things, and we've been right about everything, unfortunately. And if you remember, the international forecaster between 13,700 and 14,000 said, get out of the market if you can't go into gold and silver-related assets or oil stocks, then the best thing for you to do is take your investments that you can't control and put them in money market funds that you best you can hope for. And so, again, we have called the top of the market like we did in the first week of April of 2000. Actually, we were 2 weeks late, but that's okay. We got close, and I think we're close again here in our prognostication. And, yes, as you said, Dr. Stan, the markets were down. I'll give you some readings and some feelings on this. The Nikkei Dow, which is like the Dow Jones Industrial Average in the United States, only it's in Japanese stocks, was down 525 points at 13,326. Now, this is down from 18,000 about 5 or 6 weeks ago. So that's been a precipitous plunge. The inside numbers, these are all Dow Jones converted numbers. The Dow in the futures market early on today was down 367. The S&P was off the equivalent of 450 in Dow points, and NASDAQ was off 369 Dow points. But if you look at the Financial Times 100 in London, they were off the equivalent of 540 Dow points. Now, I understand in the CAC 40 in Paris and the DAX in Frankfurt were off somewhat less, but they were still off in big numbers. The Asian market right now is trading down on the Nikkei 300 points lower.
All right, we will be back in just a moment or two to talk about what's happening in the derivative market, because that's where a lot of the action is coming from that is going to destroy the financial stability of our nation and the world. We'll be right back here with Bob Chapman.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared, but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout. Developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
Now that we are in the midst of the presidential primaries, Republican candidate Ron Paul needs our support more than ever. Ron Paul stands for the issues that need to be addressed and not glossed over and forgotten like the globalist crowd being fielded. Unlike other candidates, Ron Paul takes a stand to follow what our forefathers envisioned America to be through the Constitution. Dr. Paul will restore sound money, eliminate the IRS, prevent the NAU, get us back to our constitutional roots, and guard our nation here at home by bringing home the troops. Show your support for Ron Paul today. Go to RonPaulStickers.com to find the latest Ron Paul promotional media to help promote our last hope for America. Yard signs, bumper stickers, window decals, buttons, car magnets, and much more. Support Ron Paul. Take the stand for the traditional values that America needs. Go to RonPaulStickers.com and help get the word out about Ron Paul. This is our chance, America. Stand up. Now is the time to act.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful, attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Stand back here. Our guest this afternoon is Bob Chapman. He was giving us a rundown on what's happening as far as the world markets are concerned. And anything else now? What about happening in the rest of the world?
The Japanese market and the Asian markets are all down again considerably. And so I would think that the Dow would probably open up in the morning around 500 points down. We're talking about the futures starting around 2 a.m. Eastern time. And I believe that the plunge protection team, as it's euphemistically called, its proper name is the Working Group in Financial Markets, will be seriously in the market with other central banks trying to shore up the averages in each of the important countries. At the same time today, they had gold down around $17. I think gold will probably open early in the morning, down around 9 or 10, and then probably rally back to a minus 0 to a minus $5. And the same with silver. Silver was down 50 cents today. It'll probably rally back a minus 25 tomorrow. Because, you know, the prices you're seeing here in metals, particularly gold and silver, platinum, palladium. Platinum was off $8 and palladium was off $4. What you're seeing here is access markets. These are extraordinarily thin markets that are easily manipulated by the Working Group in Financial Markets and the Federal Reserve and other central banks. And once the exchanges open, like the first and second fixings in London, which is preceded by the very thin as well TOCOM market, which is the Tokyo COMEX type market. Those markets should, I think, come in around flat, particularly in London. And I think as long as the Dow comes in and rallies back to a minus 1 or 2 or 300, I think gold will stay sacrosanct and perhaps up a little or down a little on the day. Yes, this is a very volatile period. It is a reflection, particularly on an American holiday, which traders always like to act so that they can affect markets in a big way with small volume. And it is a reflection of what Stan and I have been talking about for a long, long time, the discovery that the financial system is broke, and the question is, can it be fixed? This could have been, in fact, too, part of a groundwork laying for an emergency Fed meeting, which is a possibility, and a reduction of perhaps a half a point or even more in the interest rate, which is not going to affect anything at this point in time, but it psychologically will affect people. And the money supply, which is M3, which is no longer published, the month before last was 17.5% increase in the United States. I'm looking at something around 15.5 to 16 when I figures come out here shortly. And so there has been a drawback in money and credit, but the growth in the business loans has still been outrageous. And that is continuing. So I think it will stay around this level or go higher. And that adds supposedly to helping the economy when in fact it can't. You just can't throw money at it and expect that that's going to solve the problem like some sort of magic elixir. It just doesn't work that way. And so we're in for plenty more trouble. Where's the Dow going? On the short term, that's between now and probably about the 15th of March, anywhere between 9,000 and 12,000. Sure, big parameter, but it's hard to know. If I had to get give a solid guess, I'd say 10,000 to 10,300, which is another 2,000-point drop. You've got to remember that corporations, when they see this kind of carnage going on, they're going to write off everything under the sun that they have to write off and take whatever losses they've got in the middle of this so nobody will notice. And so you're going to see all kinds of nasty things coming out. And a lot of it will be not seen or forgotten because of all of the wild things that are going on. And so you might see a purging process here during the first quarter. And at 10,000, maybe the market during the next 6 months of the year into September, October, might rally back 2,000 Dow points in what can be called a bear market dead cat bounce, as it's known in the brokerage industry, where I spent 28 years of my life. And I think after the election, the problems are not going to be solved. It's going to be very nasty. Gold has a shot of going to $1,000 before the end of March and perhaps before the end of February. And I think it's going a lot higher. And no matter what they do, the world financial system is in serious trouble.
Well, you know, it was fascinating. It was either Thursday or Friday there was an article in the Wall Street Journal about derivatives, and a derivative writer called ACA that has about $450 million in assets, but it has derivative obligations somewhere between $60 and $69 billion. And of course, they owe a lot of money. They've made bets that, you know, the people would be paying on their bonds. They're not doing it. And of course, they may very well go down, but what's even more interesting, they pointed out that many of the other major derivative writers, these are the people, you know, that got probably a couple of hundred $1 billion in derivatives, and these people may very well have their financial rating lowered, in which case they're going to have to start putting up more and more money to cover that. And would you like to talk about derivatives? Because it looks to me like
the whole derivative market coming unraveled. Well, first of all, ACA is bankrupt. It's in receivership for all intents and purposes, and it's in a workout. And what is a workout? Well, let's just try and say that it's something like let's limit the damage as much as possible. Two sides to the problem. Number one, the bankruptcy, the collapse of ACA. The other side of it is all the people who were insured in their bonds by ACA, and because of that being insured by ACA, those bonds received higher ratings than they would normally get. ACA carried a AAA rating. So you might have a bond that was a B or a double B or a triple B or an A that was getting a AAA rating. Municipals were very commonly like that. And they're going to lose all their ratings. Now that means two things. Number one, that all of the institutions that must only have AAA rated paper in their portfolios have got to sell. That's going to drive the bond market down, particularly in municipals in this case. On the other hand, there's a losses to be contended with. We're talking $69 billion. We're also talking about, and these are insurers, creators of derivatives, creators of derivatives that did not have the collateralization behind them, that they went to other insurers and they asked them to write them insurance policies on their insurance policies, so to speak. Now, we find that they're underwater. Now, the question is, will the other writers of derivatives that sold them to ACA, will they go under? Okay, we have an additional problem, and that is we've got two more companies who are the two largest in the business, and they are MBIA and the other one's AMCO or something like that.
Yeah.
And they're in the same position. Now, it's AMBAC. AMBAC just lost their AAA. They have a AA. So that means that all of the people that were insured by AMBAC that have to have AAA paper in their portfolio, they've got to sell. And they raised money. No, they didn't raise money. They had to raise $1 billion. They couldn't do it. Or they didn't want to do it either or. And they're on the edge of bankruptcy, and they will go under. MBIA, they've raised money. They probably will stay in business. Now, what happens? Can the system take $2.4 trillion worth of insurance protective losses? I don't think so. And I think the federal government's going to have to step in and guarantee those losses. They'll nationalize the insurance. And that's what every corporatist, fascist government does. That's what this is all about. Consolidation in insurance and banking, derivatives, brokerage, corporations, the formulating of large entities that works with government to control the population. And so these derivatives, for all intents and purposes, are worthless. You haven't seen anything yet. Today was child's play. As we go out 3 or 4 years from now, you might be looking at a Dow at 1,250. That was the last support level, 1,250. But the real support level in these markets is between 4,000 and 4,500. And I've been through these markets for almost 50 years. I know all the numbers. I fortunately am not senile yet, and I have a photographic memory, and it's still working.
All right. Well, we're going to be back here in just a moment with Bob Chapman. Certainly, if you read that article in the Wall Street Journal, it's excellent. Other than they say there's about $43 trillion in derivatives. The true figure is something like, well, it's over $400 trillion. I don't know why their very excellent article just missed the important part of the story. We'll be right back.
Through the years of providing water filters to America, you've come to us and we've listened. You asked us to make the water level visible to eliminate the guesswork when refilling the water. We listened. You asked for an elevated base so the system could be used in places beside on the edge of a counter. We listened. You asked us to develop a filter that was made in the USA. We listened. You asked us to include an emergency light for camping and during power outages. We listened. After 9/11, you asked us to develop a filter that was more powerful in removing chemical agents. Again, we listened. Introducing the Berkey Light, the gravity filter requested by America, designed by Americans, and made in America.
Get the Berkey Light, the American water purifier, only $279. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com. Not yet available in Iowa.
Ted Anders from Midas, January 21st, 2008. Gold, 872 ounce gold coins can be purchased for $897.60, 442.20 for half, 221.10 for quarter. That's $897.60, 442.20 and 221.10. The Chinese government has begun a campaign of economic threats against the U.S., hinting liquidation of its vast holdings of U.S. treasuries, responding to Washington's trade sanctions, forcing the Yuan Revolution. Communist Party bodies are warning that Beijing may use its 1.33 trillion reserves as a political weapon, causing bond yields to spike, hammering the U.S. housing market, and throwing the economy into a recession. Russia, Switzerland, and several other countries have reduced their holdings due to this threat. Economist Ambrose Evans Pritchard published the report, China Threatens Nuclear Option of Dollar Sales. Call for the report today, 800-686-2237. The value of your hard-earned money is being lost in a global game of chess. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
Some people believe a group of wealthy men control political parties, the American media, and the wealth of our nation. Is this true? Dr. Stanley Monteith spent 40 years studying secret societies and subversive movements. He lived in Africa for 3 years, and when he returned home, he studied the writings of the men who shaped the modern world. His book, Brotherhood of Darkness, identifies the people who control the world and the organizations they created. Dr. Monteith exposes the movement behind Rhodes scholarships, the origin of the Council on Foreign Relations, and the myths surrounding communism. He discusses the goal of all covert organizations, so if you read Brotherhood of Darkness, you will learn a secret that has been passed down through the centuries. When you learn this secret, you will understand what the future holds and what you must do to help preserve our nation. Call and order your copy. 877-300-7645. Only $12.95. That's 877-300-7695.
Do you need more than just the constant news of impending tyranny? Yes, this is Elizabeth Border back with the Divided Kingdom, the hour that analyzes spiritual and cultural issues too. Lou Blanchard and I are delighted, thanks in large part to past listeners' lobbying efforts, now to be on the Great Genesis Communications Network Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Central. Formidable Alex Jones says, "This is the network often imitated, but never duplicated. Lou and I made the conscious decision to move to GCN because of its classy lineup and leadership. We invite you to hear our program, one we pray will strengthen and bless you. Indeed, trouble is part of the story, but the fellowship of faith surpasses it. Tune in at 6 p.m. Central with the Divided Kingdom."
Stan back here. Our guest is Bob Chapman. We're talking about the derivative markets, and I was just commenting that if you read the article in the Wall Street Journal, they comment that there are about $43 trillion out there in derivatives. Bob, is that an accurate figure?
Now that those are in swaps only.
Mm-hmm.
And these are credit swaps, which is insurance against a company going bankrupt. There are $550 trillion in derivatives in total. And to put it into perspective, the gross domestic product of the United States is somewhere between $14 and $15 trillion. The whole thing is a house of cards. It's a Ponzi scheme. We've been writing about that since 1993, and nobody wanted to listen. And finally, in the last several years, other writers picked up on it, and they've been writing on it too. But we are a voice in the wilderness. The public doesn't know, doesn't care, doesn't understand. And the people in Washington, Wall Street, and corporations, they're merrily running along, making themselves extremely rich at your expense.
Well, I think it's vitally important that we warn the people so that they can at least begin to try to protect themselves and will not be shocked as financial crisis after financial crisis after financial crisis occurs, and all of them leading, I think, to the ultimate destruction of the financial system we have, because a lot of our major banking institutions, a lot of our major financial institutions are really on the verge of bankruptcy. And we're talking about institutions like Merrill Lynch. We're talking about a Citigroup, which is the largest bank in the United States. I don't know where Bank of America is, but I'm very concerned since they bought up Countrywide. Certainly Morgan Stanley is having to borrow money from, I don't know, the Chinese or somebody. So they're all having to go to other countries really to borrow money and having to pay, you know, 9 or 10 or 12% interest on the preferred bonds that they're giving them. I mean, that is, talk about usury. I love it when the banks have to pay interest rates like that.
Well, also, what they did on those preferreds is that the buyers said, if you create further dilution by issuing more bonds like this or preferreds like this in the form of equity injection, then you have to lower the conversion price on us being able to convert from preferred to common stock when we choose.
Right.
And so, you know, most people don't know that that's in the writing, in the issuance of the equities for the money. And, you know, if you weren't within the brokerage business for as many years as I was, you wouldn't know what to look for. And that's a very important fact, as is the 9 to 12% interest payments that they're making. It just shows you how desperate they are for money. They are all bankrupt. And these are rescues by people who want to dump dollars and at the same time get equity in such giant, important American corporations, hoping that they'll stay in business. And I think there's a lot of arm twisting going on too, saying, look, we don't want to raise this money domestically, and I'll tell you why, because we don't want to open our books any wider than they are. We don't want to tell anybody what we have off balance sheet, and on and on. So there's a lot of things here that the average person wouldn't look for because they don't know what to look for. And that's why you listen to Dr. Stan's program and to people like me who are on that program to tell you what's really going on, the truth. And yes, the banking system is in serious trouble. And it's been that way for 6 months. That's why gold went over $900 an ounce. That's why gold's going to go to $3,000 an ounce. And you say to yourself, self, what do I do? Well, if you can't invest, you better try as quickly as possible to get it out of that credit card debt and revolving debt, which and also your vehicle debt, which is not dismissible in bankruptcy. And second of all, once you clear the decks, try to get yourself some gold and silver-related assets. This episode, we'll call it, is going to last probably for 3 or 4 years in spite of what you're looking at today and tomorrow. The financial system as such will not collapse in a day. It'll be bloody all the way down.
Amen to that. Well, we're going to be back in just a moment or two with Bob Chapman. I mean, if you have a question, we'll take your calls at 800-259-5791. That's 1-800-259-5791. Ladies and gentlemen, we are probably in the most dangerous time of your life as far as the financial situation of America and the world.
you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Now you can upgrade your existing gravity filter to remove chemicals such as trimethylenes, atrazine, benzene, chlorine, chloroform, and MTBE to below detectable limits. Black Berkey elements are so powerful, they remove pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and transform water, even raw, stagnant pond water, into delicious crystal clear drinking water. Nitrates, nitrites, radon 222, unwanted heavy metals like lead, mercury, and aluminum are no problem. Foul tastes like chlorine and obnoxious sulfur odors are removed without removing the healthful and beneficial minerals that your body needs. Black Berkey elements flow 1.5 to 2 times faster than ordinary gravity elements, which means it takes much less time to filter your water. Supercharge your gravity filter today. Upgrade to Black Berkey purification elements.
Get a 2-pack, only $99, or a 4-pack, only $188. Call New Millennium, 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438, or order on the web at berkeywater.com.
Hi, this is Brother Michael Diamond. You can now get the most important package ever on what has happened to the Catholic Church in the last 50 years. Find out how this massive crisis concerning the Catholic Church happened, what happened, and how the Bible predicted it would take place in the last days. The package contains 6 DVDs that contain 10 different programs, 2 books that combined are over 1,000 pages and other information. Order now at our website, mostholyfamilymonastery.com. That's mostholyfamilymonastery.com. The last word monastery is spelled M-O-N-A-S-T-E-R-Y. Or call us at 1-800-275-1126. That's 1-800-275-1126. Or mail in your order to us at 4425 Schneider Road, Fillmore, New York, 14735. The total cost for this massive package of information is only $10, $15 for UPS Ground, or $30 outside the U.S.
This is George Whitehurst Berry of the Genesis Communications Network. Have you ever wanted the truth about the economy? Crash, Are You Ready? Is the fastest growing program on GCN. Our 1-hour program airs weekdays, Monday through Friday, from 10 to 11 a.m. Central Time, just after the Power Hour and just before Alex Jones. To listen to rebroadcast 24 and 7, visit our website at www.hearitonline.com and click on the appropriate link. Our unparalleled guest lineup has included patriots such as Congressman Ron Paul, Scott Ritter, former UN Chief Weapons Inspector Murray Neal, inventor of the revolutionary dragonskin body armor, and Philip Tourme, USS Liberty survivor. We also focus on alternative health and survival topics. Go to www.hearitonline.com. That's HEARITONLINE.com.
Well, Dr. Stan, back here at the American Genesis Network. Our guest is Bob Chapin. But before we go on, Bob, would you like to go ahead and get information out on how people could get a copy of the International Forecaster and perhaps subscribe?
Well, the International Forecast is about business, finance, economics, and social and political issues all over the world. We publish by internet, by email, twice a week on Wednesdays and Saturdays, usually runs around 30 pages each. And we have a hard copy, which goes out twice a month for those who are not on the internet. If you'd like to go to our site, the address is theinternationalforecaster.com. The International, FORECASTER.com. If you'd like to email us, that address is international_forecaster@yahoo.com. international_forecaster@yahoo.com. And if you'd like to call toll free for a free introductory copy, you can call 800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. And you can also get a free copy off the site as well.
All right. Well, I think it's so important that people have the information and they can follow it closely themselves so they can anticipate what's coming down the line. And I will tell our listeners, I read the International Forecaster with anticipation when it comes out twice a week. In fact, I felt a little deprived. We didn't have one this last Saturday, but we got to give Bob a little time off. But I'm sure we'll have one this week, and lots of exciting things are happening. And of course, the price of gold and silver are totally manipulated, as are so many things. But eventually, they get to the point where they just can't manipulate them anymore. And of course, when the markets start collapsing around the world, they just don't have enough money indefinitely to prop up our stock market. This is the thing. And believe me, the markets are collapsing around the world because they understand the implications of the derivative market. They understand the implications of what's happening. I just got my propane tank filled today. It used to cost $500 to fill up that propane tank. This morning, it cost $1,440 to fill up my propane tank. Now, what you're seeing, you know, is simply an explosion of prices, and for the average individual, they're going to have less money to spend. Certainly, a lot of people are in real trouble with their credit cards. Now the interest on credit cards is 20%. A lot of people apparently are defaulting on their loans for their SUVs and for the trucks and all of these things they bought, which means that a lot of the finance companies are going to be in trouble, and the bonds that they've issued are going to be in trouble. Is that going to be a factor, Bob?
It certainly will. We put a short about 2 or 3 months ago on Harley-Davidson, which is the large manufacturer of motorcycles, at around 59, and it's been trading in the low 40s and probably has quite a ways to go. And that's because they were doing the same thing that the banks were doing and many others were doing in companies as well, and that was giving credit to people who they know could not make the payments. And I don't know what they were thinking about. I think they were thinking about as soon as they made the loans that they would sell them to investment bankers who would package them as asset-backed securities along with cars and trucks and pools and mobile homes and things like that. And that was the incentive because there was a securitized market to dump them into. And this is what these derivatives have caused. And, of course, the Federal Reserve, particularly Sir Alan Greenspan and Wall Street, they didn't want any regulation of derivatives, and they still don't. Can you imagine having an instrument that is traded to the tune of $550 trillion that has no regulation? It defies imagination. And, of course, the SEC is useless in and of itself anyway. All they do is protect Wall Street.
Well, obviously, I mean, the whole world is really in trouble. What's happening to the Chinese stock market? Is that going down as well?
Yeah, it is, and it has been. And all markets are going to be affected. We have the largest consuming economy in the world. And countries like Mexico, 80% of their exports go to America, 85% of Canadian. I don't know what the Chinese percentage is, but I'll guess at 50. And they're going to lose a third to 50% of their business. And so they're all going to have similar problems. And Germany is a large exporter. If we have worldwide recession and or depression, they're going to be affected, and generally speaking, most of the European countries either have slight trade surpluses or they have deficits. And I think there's going to be a great awakening, and this thing is not going to be over quickly. We're going to have hyperinflation. It's going to go out another 2 or 3 or 4 years, and then the thing will collapse, and then we're going to have a depression for who knows how long?
Well, certainly Japan has been in depression for well over 20 years now, 27 years.
Seventeen years
since 1990. So, I mean, it's
and you know that they did the same thing that our Federal Reserve, which is a private corporation, which is no more federal than Federal Express, they're doing the same thing. and it's not going to work.
Sure.
And they know that. And they're doing it because they don't know what else to do, and they don't want the public to find out what the bankers in Wall Street have done to them. Because when they find out, there's going to be trials and people are going to go to jail. Those who are lucky enough that don't get shot down in the street by irate investors. I mean, what has gone on is beyond belief. I mean, I spent my whole life in finance, economics, and in this whole theater on Wall Street, etc. And I know what I'm talking about. And I know what these people have done. They've been doing it for years. And now they've got caught. And they don't want to be caught. They don't want that wonderful life to end. I see in Atlanta a couple who lived extravagantly, and I don't know the reason why, but it was involved in finance, and they just committed suicide. And you're going to see a lot more of this.
Well, I fear that you're absolutely right, and certainly we see the things that are developing, the falling home sales, the falling and contracting construction. A lot of people with big business developments, certainly shopping centers, and they can't get anybody to rent from them. Because, of course, the housing is not there. They were putting in the shopping centers because they anticipated the housing growth, and it's not there. I think we're going to see an awful lot of the people, doing all of this on borrowed money, begin to go bankrupt. And that's going to be, as a lot of the companies on Wall Street began going bankrupt, and the people bought the stocks, and I'm sure a lot of hedge funds and pension funds and others have bought stocks, and I'm concerned about a lot of our pension funds underfunded. They're going to be in real troubles too. I think a lot of our municipalities, school boards are not going to be able to pay on their bonds, and California one of these days they're going to get into such a situation they cannot. Will not be able to actually pay the interest on their bonds. They've got $40 billion they put out just this last year. They want to put out another $40 billion today, but nobody ever stops and asks, where's the money coming from to pay back the bonds? And that's the real problem we have, isn't it, Bob?
Well, 75% of the money that's needed on average for the S&P 500 companies for pensions is there. That means they're not fully funded. Now, if the market goes from 14,000 to 7,286, where it went in 2001, ostensibly they probably lose half of their investment. Now, pray tell, if that's the bottom, how are they going to continue to pay out at the rates that they are? They're not going to be able to. And if the market and the Dow would drop to 4,000 to 4,500, that would be two-thirds lower than what it is now. And that means that pensions might get cut a half or maybe even two-thirds. It also would mean probably the government would step in and say, well, let's cut Social Security, too. Now, there is an opposite side to that, because the $2.50 loaf of bread that we're paying for now would probably drop somewhere down to around a dollar or maybe 80 cents. But it still means a diminution in assets. You talked about the commercial building market. Totally illiquid because there's no credit out there. Just in the last 6 months, commercial real estate has dropped between 15 and 35%. And you can't make a trade because there's no money to be able to be borrowed to make a deal. And that is going to get worse, not better.
Yes, I can remember exactly how that was back in 1980, 1981, 1982, when there just wasn't any money to buy things with, to buy buildings, to buy shopping centers, to buy apartment houses, and you couldn't even borrow money to build them. That's what the real problem was. And so I think that we're going to see a contraction of, even though there's a lot of money out there, it's going to be very, very hard to be able to borrow it. And that seems to be in many ways sort of a contradiction, Bob. On one hand, the world's awash with money. On the other hand, it's increasingly difficult to get to borrow money to do the things you want to. So where's all the money going?
Business is taking most of it. And they're the engine. And the minute business stops borrowing money, And that includes banks and brokerage houses as well as corporations and middle and small businesses. They're trying to keep them afloat. The Fed is. And that's why they're having these every other week $30 billion auctions. And this paper is supposed to be good for 30 days or 15 days or whatever it is. And then it's supposed to be redeemed. In other words, you get your money back at the Fed plus interest. But that's not happening. The Fed is just rolling the money. And this is extraordinarily highly inflationary. It's a monetization of what the Fed is putting out. And, of course, as we all know, the Fed creates money out of thin air like some kind of a magician. And so money's there. It has to be borrowed. It is being borrowed for the time being. How long will that last? I don't know. If I had to guess, probably another couple of years in hyperinflation. And then we'll gradually start to see a diminution in the use of credit and borrowing and a diminution in the increase in money supply. And when that happens, the bottom will fall out. And that's why it's so important you get rid of debt. I'm not talking about your house, but you get rid of all the other debt. You get in gold and silver-related assets as quickly as possible. And if you don't do that, you're dumb. Because I've been on this program now for 15 years. In the last 7 years, I've told everybody to do that, and everybody that has is in decent shape, if not very good shape. And all those people who are buying gold and silver coins and shares at $270 gold have made a fortune, and they will continue to do so. We're only one-third of the way through that bull market. We got two-thirds to go. There's going to be piles of money made, and you can use that money to offset the losses that you're going to take on the value of your home and your business and your vehicles and anything else you own, including that Rembrandt painting that you got hanging in your bathroom.
Well, I think it's going to be an exciting, difficult, frightening, dangerous time for most people, and at least we have a grasp of what's going on. Of course, I really believe that eventually they're going to be moving towards chaos and crisis, and of course, I really believe the government anticipates all of this. That's why, they've built the concentration camps. That's why they've given Halliburton $385 million a year on a four-year contract to stand by to build more concentration camps. Why would you want more when you've already got all the old army camps and the old Japanese and Italian prison camps, and you're fixing those up? Well, they must be planning on a lot of visitors at those concentration camps, is all I can say. And, of course, if that happens, then America as we know it will cease to exist. In other words, the freedom we've enjoyed will no longer be here.
Well, every adult and every family and anybody above 10 years old should have their own assault weapon at home and know how to use it, because you may have to.
Well, let's hope it never comes to that point, but who knows what the future holds when we have people in Washington, D.C., who are buying up property in Paraguay, and that's, of course, the Bush family. Why would they be buying up, tens of thousands of acres in Paraguay? What do they know?
First of all, it's on an aquifer. Secondly, there's no extradition treaty with virtually any country. Thirdly, we have an American base just south of there, and they think that they can, have their own mercenary army and be able to, wait everybody else out. And that there can be no other reason why that they've done that. They expect serious trouble, and they want to be out of harm's way. Well, there is no place to hide, Bush family, and for all of your crimes, you will be brought to justice.
Well, I certainly hope so, because, of course, if you go into the background of this family, they're certainly one of the most dangerous families in the entire world. And, of course, it doesn't matter that, George Bush looks sort of, such a nice guy, a little stumbling, a little inadequate. He comes from a family of people who have sworn their loyalty to Lucifer. They've joined the Skull and Bone Society. His loyalty is still there. When he was asked by Tim Russert in 2004 about Skull and Bones, he says it's too secret to say anything about. Now, this is not a college fraternity. it is a way of life and a path to the White House and power and prestige. But if you'd like to see the ceremony of where they bow to Lucifer, you can go to WilliamHKennedy.com, WilliamHKennedy.com website. You can actually see a video of the ceremony shot at the risk of a fellow's life, because, of course, these people play for keeps, believe me. They certainly don't want you to know about the Nazi memorabilia or all the human skulls they have down there, and skull and bones. Bob, we're just about out of time. Of course, I'll be talking to you again this evening. What are your parting thoughts for our listeners today?
Well, don't get panicked. If you're in the market, get out. If you're in a money market fund, stay there if that's all you can do. Increase your gold and silver-related assets. You've got another chance to buy gold down. Take advantage of it. We got a long way to go.
All right. God bless. Thanks so much. We'll talk to you again this evening.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. This is Bob Chapman, and we'll be back in just a moment to wrap up today's program here at Genesis.
The war on terrorism, will it be fought overseas or will it affect us here at home? If you are like most folks, you want to be prepared but can't afford an underground shelter. So what do you do? Did you know that you can use your home as a shelter against fallout and biological or chemical attacks? With a little know-how, it's not that difficult. Sheltering in place, surviving acts of terrorism from biological, chemical, and radioactive fallout. Developed by Wayne LeBaron, a health physicist who has served as a specialist in environmental health, communicable diseases, and has worked as a nuclear specialist for the U.S. government, gives you easy-to-follow video instructions and walks you step-by-step through the process of preparing your home as a shelter. Get this critical video every American needs for only $29 plus shipping. Order by calling New Millennium today at 888-803-4438. That's 888-803-4438. Or order on the web at BerkeyWater.com.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll-free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our Founding Fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
It's a fact. Since the creation of the Federal Reserve in 1913, all banks in these United States create money out of thin air for every single loan they issue. With never-ending late fees, over-the-limit fees, and higher interest rates, it has become mathematically impossible to repay all debt, making all of us slaves to our creditors. The Federal Debt Relief System has created a successful attorney-backed program to legally eliminate credit card debt, personal loans, lines of credit, and other unsecured debts which have been fraudulently created by the banks. We can terminate your unsecured debt within 18 months with a much lower monthly payment, ending with nothing on your credit report. Join the thousands of Americans who now breathe with a sigh of relief because they have legally eliminated their debt. Instead of living each day in fear and frustration, it's time to take action and turn your life around. Call the Federal Debt Relief System at 877-943-8600. That's 877-943-8600. Or visit FDRS.org. Find out how you can break the cycle of debt slavery. Visit FDRS.org today.
Well, Dr. Stan back here at the Genesis Communication Network, and this is the time I need to remind you that Radio Liberty, my ministry, is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there across America, we do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Then I want to tell you about a new pamphlet we've got. Basically, it's based upon five of our newsletters, July, August, September, October, and November of last year. We call it Financial Meltdown. It's the five newsletters we wrote about what's going on financially and, of course, the disastrous consequences of of our current policy. And then, of course, we do have the little pamphlet. It's similar. It's called The History of Money. Now, these are only $3.95 each, and of course, plus shipping. Then, of course, we carry the book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. We carry the book, The Federal Reserve Conspiracy. And then we carry the book, The Fiat Money Inflation in France. But The Creature from Jekyll Island is probably one of the most important books you'll ever read. It's written by our good friend Ed Griffin, and he did a magnificent job in explaining how this whole scam works. And it is a scam. You know, if you can print money out of nothing, you can buy up the media, you can buy up the corporations, you can fund the great tax-exempt foundations, you can buy up the policies and the, you know, at the universities, you can control politicians, you can rule the nation. Being able to create money out of nothing is the greatest scam in the world, and most people don't understand that's how they do it. That's what fractional reserve banking is really all about. So The History of Money is an excellent source of information, as is our new little pamphlet called Financial Meltdown. Then, of course, we do hope many of you will get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, because it'll take you into the spiritual forces which are working behind the scenes. And if you go to and you read the material that's put out by the people affiliated with the dark side, and of course that'll be my January newsletter, we simply quote extensively from them. They'll tell you they have people who are dominating the world financial system. And that comes from a little pamphlet put out by the Lucis Trust. It used to be the Lucifer Publishing House. Now it's the Lucis Trust. Certainly the work of the spiritual hierarchy. And of course we'll be quoting extensively from that in our January newsletter, where, of course, we tell you what I fear the future holds and why the media in America, why our courts in America, why the Justice Department are trying to suppress Sybil Edmonds' story. And if you don't know what Sybil Edmonds' story is, why, it's up on the Internet. She gave an interview to the Sunday Times in London, and it was published on the 6th of January. She's been threatened with imprisonment for telling what she knew. She told what she knew. And, of course, the question is, why were they so interested in suppressing her story? What's the implication of it? And we tell you what the implication is in our January newsletter. Certainly, if you don't subscribe to the Radio Liberty newsletters, you should. You know, our December letter will be going out very, very shortly. And certainly, if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and get our four best tapes of the month and get our monthly newsletter, why, you can do it by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, or you can just subscribe to our newsletter. But the important thing is, of course, that you're getting the information and you'll help us to get it out, because you can go up on the Internet and you can pull these things down for nothing. We have our programs up there, radio programs, they're available. And you can listen to them for nothing. We have a lot of our DVDs posted. You can listen to them for nothing. We have our newsletters posted. You can read them and copy them for nothing. We want to get the information out. And if you can help us, fine. If you can't help us, we understand. But the important thing is that we get the American people educated about what is really going on. Because, of course, we're involved in a spiritual battle. A spiritual battle that's being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Most people have no idea what's going on, and you've got to help us educate them, one at a time. Well, we're going to be back here in just a few minutes for the second program, and it'll be an exciting program. I'll be right back in just a moment here at Genesis.
Hello, folks. Alex Jones here, introducing Prudent Places USA, an interactive CD book that is your premier resource for hard-to-find information. Find out about everything from job migration to evacuation information, such as major bridges in disrepair, and FEMA evacuation time studies for coastal cities. Zero in on man-made disaster zones, environmental areas of concern, and natural disaster zones. Find out everything from where to get water in an emergency to geographic income levels. Housing prices, complete with over 3 gigabytes of detailed information on the 3,000-plus counties in the U.S., full-color photographs, 550 high-resolution full-color maps, and detailed information and analysis that you need. Order Prudent Places.
Going out over the air. Just a moment here.
Great.
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be those of Barry Shamish, who is a Jewish patriot who, of course, had lived in Israel for many years. He had written extensively about the assassination of Rabin, and, of course, pointed out that it was like the assassination of President Kennedy was arranged by people in the government. It wasn't the lone assassin, as we've been told, the lone nut at all. It was a government hit. And, of course, Barry was able actually to convince about half of the religious Jews living in Israel that this was the case. And this has been estimated by others. Well, anyway, of course, Barry came under a tremendous attack there. And because of attempts on his life, he's living here in the United States. And I hope someday he can go back to his home. But right now, why, it's a pleasure to be able to have him on our programs and to bring us abreast of some of the things that are going on, because he is a very astute observer of not only of things happening in America, but things happening in Israel. He constantly keeps us updated with the treasonous acts that are going on in Israel, intent upon the destruction of that nation, and how that ties in, of course, to the Council on Foreign Relations here in the United States that is intent upon destroying our nation. But without further ado, Barry, it's good to have you with us.
Well, I'm always glad to be here. It's very therapeutic.
All right. Well, you go right ahead.
Well, I'm just going to mention something no one knows anything about before I dive into things people actually know about. But my Israeli contacts, and they're very good, very astute, have sent me the sad story of the mayor of Ra'anana, a very nice town and very clean, and they were very proud of their mayor. His name was Uzi Cohen. But a strange thing happened to Uzi, oh, I guess 4 days ago. That's when the report started coming in, maybe 5 days ago. He was indicted for corruption on the same day. The indictment went through, the reports went through, it was all over the country, and then he has supper. And he doesn't feel good after he eats supper, so he's taken to the hospital where he dies. He's 55 years old. He was an old-fashioned chayrutnik from the old days. Now, people wrote me, and they all said the same thing, what did he have for supper? I mean, really, you're 55, the meal disturbs you, and you're dead an hour later. And nobody knows the story, and I don't know this story. In Israel, he's very well known and respected. Whatever corruption went on, I mean, they all do it. They don't kill themselves, and they don't get killed. But from what I've been reading, he was poisoned, and then he died on the day the corruption charges against him were made public. And I assume that whatever corruption was involved, it involved really big, big hotshots, really big people who did not want him going to trial, because he was dead that evening after a very bad meal, apparently, at home.
Boy.
And as I said before, that's how they get you. I've spoken about my strokes. I drank a little wine at home, and the next thing I knew, my mind had switched. And I couldn't talk, and for a month, they will poison you there. And so just keep that in mind. It may turn into something. Just keep the name Uzi Cohen, mayor of Ra'anana, in mind. If it does turn into something, you heard it first here.
All right, fine. Well, we'll be back in just a moment with our special guest, Barry Shamish, as we explore, of course, what's happening in Israel, what's happening in the United States, because, of course, the destiny of the two nations is intermingled. There's no way to separate them. We'll go right ahead, Barry.
Well, the usual, of course, is Sterot. Sterot had a terrible week with 150 Qassam rockets, 50-odd mortars. The town is emptied out. Now, the biggest employer in the town was a company called Hollandia. They make mattresses. They employed 400 people. They announced they're moving. They can't live under rocket threat and export to Europe, which is where they sell most of their mattresses. So it announced, Hollandia announced that they're moving out of Sderot. And so the Prime Minister visits Sderot 2 days after this announcement, and he gives a report to the Knesset. Now, I'm going to mention one other thing that we've already mentioned, but it's worthy of recalling that last week the IDF produced a report that said that 3,000 Sderot apartments are now deserted. Now, this was a town of 24,000, assuming five per family, which is probably about right for Sderot. That means about 15,000 people of the 24,000 have left. There are but perhaps 9,000 people left in Sderot. So Olmert goes and gives them an uplifting visit, which I assume they just didn't care about. They have enough to think about without having this idiot show up. Nonetheless, Olmert addresses the Knesset with the most uplifting speech you ever heard, that Sderot is as healthy as ever, that they're used to rockets now, he says, and he gives some statistics. One, unemployment in Sderot is the lowest in the country, 3.9%. What a statistic. Now, the fact that all the workers have left Sderot, you know, that there's no one left to be employed or not employed, he kind of forgets that, that whoever was employed at the mattress factory, I guess followed the mattress factory wherever it was, but with only 9,000 people living in the town, it's got the lowest unemployment rate in the country. And he forgets to mention that's because they have the lowest percentage of employable adults in the country. That little fact kind of just kind of is in the background. I mean, everyone should cheer that unemployment is so low in Sderot.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Barry Samish, and we're certainly talking about what's going on in Israel today. And, of course, this town that Barry is talking about, Sderot, has it under constant attack by either mortar fire or by rocket fire, and thousands of people have fled, and there are 3,000 empty apartments in the town. It's a small town to begin with, and of course the Prime Minister Olmert, who's really responsible for what's going on, because, well, I suppose it would be Sharon, because he was the one who supervised the turning of Gaza over to Hamas, and Hamas, of course, is using this as a base now to launch missiles into Israel. If they didn't have that, they wouldn't be able to hit, you know, into Israel itself. And so, but basically, I mean, here's a town that's under constant rocket barrage every day. Probably 10, 20, 30, 50 rockets hit there. People are fleeing. Everybody who can get out and leave has left. And Prime Minister Olmert had given a talk to the Knesset saying how wonderful things were in this town, and really, of course, it was reflected by the fact that they had such a low unemployment level. And we'll go ahead, pick up the story.
Well, it gets even better. Now, there's a new program to get Sderot children out of there and take them to the United States. And 150 Sderot kids are now signed up, and they're either in America or heading to America. And plus, of course, those 3,000 empty apartments, they took their children with them. But no problem, because according to Olmert, education in Sderot is really great, that it's got the highest percentage of matriculation in the whole country, 70%, which is just great because there's no students left there. You know, I mean, look, the La La Land that has become Israel is so extreme that the Prime Minister has a speech after visiting Sderot where everything is peachy keen. Who cares about rockets? Everybody's working and all the kids are passing their matriculation exams, except there's no one left in the town. It's only got about 9,000 people left in them, and I assume most of the children are out of the town.
How many were there originally, Barry?
24,000.
24. So they're down from 24,000 to 9,000, but the Prime Minister insists everything's good, just like our President tells us how great our economy is. It couldn't be any better.
Well, actually, this week, Bush kind of admitted it needs a little jump start after the stock market fell 600 points in 1 week. It was kind of hard to...
Yeah, it really was. But he'll figure that we've forgotten what he said a couple of weeks ago. Go ahead.
Well, it was a tough week if you were highly invested in stocks. You had a very bad week, apparently. Tomorrow the stock market opens. I assume that the insiders are going to try and save that stock market. They don't want Bush thrown out of office because of the economy. But nonetheless, he admitted that the economy has little blips in it. This is what Olmert did not admit. Olmert had, well, everyone should move to Sherrod. I mean, you get a job. Everyone there is working. Your kids are doing great in school. So you got to hit with 150 rockets in a week. You know, what's the difference? You're working and you got great marks. This was so wacky. This was just so deeply out of touch with reality that you have to wonder who exactly was this speech for. Okay, that's the first thing. Now, Israel, after 150 rockets, Israel finally instituted supposedly a tough embargo on Gaza, where fuel oil was reduced and electricity. They don't have the fuel to run the electric plants in Gaza. Now, I read a story. My wife brought me this, as a matter of fact, in the local Florida paper, that Israel has begun a humanitarian war. This is the way it's. After, like, what's it been, 2 days? In 2 days, Gazans are starving, and they don't even have enough shrouds left to bury their dead. And they've turned this into a massive humanitarian war started by Israel without even naming the rockets. Now, in Israel's case, they did say that in 2 days you don't have a humanitarian war. But no one believes it. And this is a story I'm reading about in Florida. It is just so deeply, deeply wrong and phony, the news coming out of Israel. But I actually have a story, and it's not a bad story. In 1983, the magazine Penthouse, whether you like it or not, it's relevant because I had a long comment in the magazine responding to their view of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon. They wrote something, it ticked me off a little bit, and I wrote them back, and it got big play. This was kind of a big deal for me, because apparently the reporters of Israel read Penthouse in 1983. Now, what happened is within 2 days of the Israeli invasion of Lebanon on June 6th of 1982, the world headlines, including Time magazine, had 100,000 refugees crowding the Litani and Hasbani rivers of Lebanon, that the invasion caused a massive humanitarian crisis. Now, I went home for a day. I think it was the second or third day of the war, because I didn't have enough stuff to survive there for a month. So they let me home for 24 hours, which was a very, very scary bus ride. Let me tell you, you were worried about the bus exploding and snipers. But I came back into Lebanon, and I went over the Hasbani River and the Litani River with a copy of Time magazine that I had bought in Jerusalem, showing the war. There were a couple of tanks on the cover, and making this claim that the invasion started a humanitarian crisis with 100,000 refugees on the Litani and the Hasbani rivers. Now, I passed over both rivers. One was, they went through the cities of Tyre and Sidon, and, oh, there were 500 refugees. Maybe they went shopping or something. Maybe there were 1,000 refugees on both rivers. Okay, that's it. There was not 100,000. 100,000 means the rivers were packed bank to bank with no one and nowhere to move, and it was a lie. This humanitarian atrocity caused by Israel was a complete lie. The rivers weren't filled with refugees. Now, I went through these towns. They were pretty darn bombed out. I mean, that's for sure. There was a war, but there weren't refugees. The refugees were in their homes. Their homes were largely untouched. The buildings that were touched was where the firing was from. And they really were gutted. I mean, these towns, you drove over cobblestone streets, the cobble being made from rubble. Just one little memory, there was a movie playing there called The Land That Time Forgot, and I made a note of that as irony. And then the war ended, and there was a big conference by journalists who had covered the war, and I was pretty darn ticked by them, so I went to the conference, and you had, Carl Bernstein was there talking about the war, like he knew something about the war, but then there was the guy who wrote the article for Time magazine. His name was David Ackerman. He was the Time editorial bureau chief. And we'll get to him shortly, how I actually knew these people and what they were all about. But Ackerman spoke, and he said, you know, we're not war correspondents. And that's an understatement. Ackerman wrote a personal account of the war from Beirut, where he's in a hospital, and a guy walks in holding his belly, and then he moves his hand, and the guts fall on the floor, and it's all made up. He made up the whole story because I was in the war, and I know you can't walk with it when your guts are shattered. You're brought in on a stretcher if you're lucky. And even the sounds of the war were wrong, and I knew this was not real war. This was fake. That's what it was. And he says that we're not really war correspondents, and he admits that he can't tell a phantom from a MiG. And I got madder and madder because they had ruined Israel's reputation, that war was a humanitarian disaster started by Israel. Forget that the PLO were using Lebanon in those days as a vicious attack point against Israel, and that Menachem Begin had had enough, and that in London our ambassador was shot dead. No, he survived without a brain. He was in a coma the rest of his life. His name was Argov, Shlomo Argov. There were reasons for the war. The PLO was our enemy. It was a mess. But Israel, well, it was painted as a bad guy in Time magazine. It was painted by the New York Times as the bad guy. And this David Ackerman, oh, do I hear the music?
You hear the music, right? We've got about 20 seconds, so why don't you hold that thought? We'll be back here in just a moment. Our guest is Barry Shamish. He's pointing out how often the controlled media, Time magazine and the others, will distort the truth. Why? Because they're creating a reality. And if you believe what you read in the newspapers or even what you hear on radio, why, you better take a second look. Well, Barry, go right ahead.
Well, we're back at the conference, and essentially this David Ackerman, a dreadful writer, by the way, who wrote truly fake reports from Beirut, admits he doesn't know a mink from a phantom, and all of this sunk in, and I wrote Penthouse in reply to their coverage of the war, and I told them the story about the 100,000 refugees and me on a bus going into Tyre and through Sidon and seeing at most 1,000 refugees on both rivers. And I just summarized this news conference and Ackerman not being able to tell a mink from a phantom. And I summarized and I said, if you want to know what's wrong with the coverage of the war in Lebanon, the reporters just didn't know what they were doing. Nowadays, I know better, and I would include the CFR and Times ownership by the CFR and all this kind of stuff and wouldn't have gotten printed anyways. But I just concluded that the reporters were total ignoramuses and that they didn't hate Israel. It was all an accident. Now, I got smarter after that. Now, that little, I guess it was a letter, but they featured it. And a lot of people read it, and certainly the reporters in that town read it, and they weren't crazy about it. But I got to meet the reporters. Now, the reason I met the reporters were really two fine women who became buddies of mine for life. One worked at Time magazine. Her name is Jenny Frey. She occasionally writes for the New York Times. She had something 2 weeks ago and phoned me up, and there she was with a feature in the New York Times. She worked at Time magazine and worked for David Ackerman, and later Thomas Kelly was his name. He was, by the way, Thomas Kelly was convicted of perjury at Sharon's trial in New York after Sabra and Shatila. These are all really, really amateurish, really, really immoral people, unethical. If you think that the Fourth Estate has ethics, you got to meet these people. And I did meet them in those days, but I met them because Jenny was working at Time magazine, and I went to a couple social functions where I met Ackerman and Kelly. And my friend Jenny wanted to be a reporter, and she submitted... through Jenny, of course, she submitted freelance pieces. A couple of them got into Time, and a few others here and there got in, Christian Science Monitor and so forth. And she was absolutely enamored. Now, here are the people that, one I met, one I didn't. One was David Shipler. He was the New York Times correspondent for Jerusalem. And the second one who I didn't meet, who Jenny was, I believe, knew. She knew Shipler well. Who followed him was someone named Thomas Friedman of the CFR, by the way. He is a member of the CFR, and he works for the New York Times. And now Shipler was really, I can't begin to describe what a bozo he was. And he wrote a book that both of the New York Times correspondents wrote simply dreadful books.
Hold that thought, Barry. We'll be going to be back in just a moment as we bring our stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest, Barry Shamish. He's just talking about some of the reporters from the New York Times that he either was acquainted with or he knew of. And, of course, the New York Times is simply part of this establishment that publishes articles all the time that just aren't true. Now, I read the Times on a regular basis because I want to see what the enemy is doing. Once in a while, there'll be some wonderful, wonderful articles there, but so often they will slant the news, they'll leave out important things, leave out important speeches, and put in a lot of speeches that, well, would be better off not reported at all. So what they're doing is, of course, using their position in the press to mold our reality. But go ahead, Barry.
Well, Shipler unfortunately, I met through my friend Jenny, who, well, call her, you know, a freelance reporter. They become groupies to those who have jobs, and they become extra proud of knowing the New York Times reporter like it's an honor. Believe me, it's no honor. And I, again, I socially met these people. They probably, not probably, 100% wouldn't remember me, but I remember them. Now, Shipler, now I went onto the internet because I couldn't even remember the name of the world's worst book about Israel that ever was. It was called Wounded Spirits in the Holy Land, and it won a Pulitzer Prize. Wounded, the only wounded spirit in this book were the Arabs. It was just, it, both Shipler and Friedman's books were wonderful if you want to believe that Israel is part of Long Island and the Arabs are living next door in Queens and this is what reality is. You've got yourself, you know, tremendous books. As it is, you've got fantasies. Now, Shipler's book was just badly written. It was a high school essay. It was so pathetically written. There are no words to describe a fantasy between an Arab and a Jew that he made up that was complete nonsense. But Friedman's book was more problematic because it was readable. It was called From Beirut to Jerusalem. Now, in Beirut, maybe he got some fair reporting. I doubt it. Because the Arabs would kill him if he reported accurately about the real government and the PLO and the Syrians and all that. They reported accurately. The reporters are dead ducks. But again, from Jerusalem, I'm just going to use one example of how dreadful these books were. And remember, both won Pulitzer Prizes, and Shipler's awful book got put on educational resources. It was taught in high schools. And again, it wasn't Israel one little bit. It wasn't even the Israeli reality. It didn't exist, this country they were writing about. But again, we go backwards, and I'm going to use one example. They both had, supposedly, they both said this, the same rabbi. Now, what happened is that after Shipler left Jerusalem, he left his sources, his so-called sources, for Friedman to take over. And he's got one rabbinical source. Now, you don't know the name. Nobody remembers the name. He's not a name anyone should remember. What he did was, he pandered to the reporters and told them what they wanted to hear so he could see his name in the New York Times. And everyone knew it. And I mean, the whole rabbinical community had ostracized him. He couldn't speak anywhere except to Americans who read the New York Times and want to meet him, apparently. He could not speak to Israelis. His name was David Hartman, and he had an institute, I believe it was called the Hartman Institute for Peace or something. Both of them quoted this idiot, and I use that word accurately. I don't use it derogatory. It's not a pejorative here. We're slandering him. I mean, this guy was an idiot, and you have to read his quotes from both Shipler and Hartman about peace and about Judaism, and that Judaism supports peace, and this is, it's everything they wanted to hear. But it wasn't reality. This wasn't the way the rabbis of Israel were thinking. This guy knew his New York reporters, and he told them what we call Yiddish Bubba Misers. He told them grandmother's tales, knowing that the grandmother's tales would be quoted and would be read by millions, but they were not in any way associated with Israel. Now, I got to know these people, their writings. But my friends got to know these people in person, and they were very, very proud of them. And I would point out that Shipler's book wasn't worth 2 cents. It was just plain, ordinary bad.
Hold that thought there, Barry. We're going to be back here in just a moment to continue this discussion. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, Barry Shamus. Barry, go ahead, pick up the story. You were saying that a Shipler's book was just plain bad.
It was dreadful, but the New York Times has the control over the Pulitzer Prizes. It's that simple. They've got a way to control the Pulitzer Prizes. This is not a book of great literature. It was amateurish. Friedman's book, at least, was better written. It was just as wrong, but at least it was better written. They both win Pulitzer Prizes. That leads me to believe that somehow the Pulitzer Committee is all tied up with this CFR, and if you look hard, I'll bet you could make that case very strongly that this is the establishment rewarding points of view that the establishment wants spread every which way.
Yeah, sort of like the Nobel Prizes, and who did they give it to? Why, Al Gore, you know. And, of course, anybody who's living here in California today knows that we are not having global warming. We're having global cooling. I don't think I've ever been so cold, but go right ahead.
Well, back to Israel just briefly. Now, I knew the reporters. One's name was, I believe it was David Barrett. He actually married one of these hangers-on. She today is a provost of a major university. She was in the Jerusalem Symphony. Nonetheless, he was so viciously anti-Semitic. How he married a Jewish woman and actually had a Jewish daughter is simply beyond my understanding. He was that viciously anti-Semitic. But he did, by the way, and they're still married. But I'm going to tell just a little story. When Sadat came to Jerusalem, I was hired as a guide by the Miami, I think it was Sun. It was a big paper. They had a guy named Kiesler. He was the one they sent over to Jerusalem to cover the story, and he hired me, and we got a car, and we interviewed a bunch of people and whatever. Now, I tried to use this with this Miami paper later on that I was their advisor when Kiesler was in the country. And I went to their office, and I was well recommended, and I had a really good background. The guy, and I forget his name, I really do. This is a minor incident of my life, but I'm going to bring it up. He was a Cuban, that's what I recall. And we sit, and he says, "Who do you vote for?" And I said, "I don't think that's any of your business." And he says, "It is my business. I have to know who you vote for."
Well, that's all. We'll be back for just a moment here with Barry. Well, Dr. Stan, our guest is Barry Shamus. He's just talking about the fact that he was, of course, trying to get a job or an association with the Miami newspaper. And before the fellow would talk to him, he wanted to know who Barry voted for. And Barry said, "I don't think that's any of your business." And the fellow says, "Of course it's my business to know who you vote for." Obviously, they would want to have people who would be on the liberal side, so that they could would put out the right sort of news, and they would not rock the boat. Because the last thing that the people who control the media want is for the American people to learn the truth. So pick the story up there, Barry.
Well, the elections were in 77, and I vote for Begin. So he says, "Who did you vote for?" And I said, "Last election, I voted Likud." And he says, "I'm sorry, we can't hire you." I said, "You can't do that. You can't hire someone by who they vote for." I said, that's not done here. And he looks around, and he makes a circle with his arms. He says, "That is done here," meaning in this office. And just so you know, there was no one to complain to. And I gave an honest answer. I should have probably told him I voted for the far left, and I might have had that job. But that's not in my bloodstream to do a thing like that. I guess a lot of people do just that. They play ball with their bosses, and I guess they play ball all the way till they're promoted to be editor and whatever else, and I guess that's how the American media works. it certainly works that way in my experience with the American news networks, who I actually met. They all have the same point of view. And if you have a different point of view, they will not hire you. And I'll just tell you right now, I believe it was the Miami Sun would not hire me because I voted for Likud. He threw me out of the office, even though I had worked for them through their reporter Keister, I forget his first name. It made no difference. Unless you were with them politically, you could not get hired by them. And this, I assume, is everywhere. I assume it's just simply everywhere.
Well, I suspect it is. If you are conservative, you're not going to get a job on the vast majority of newspapers or news magazines or radio programs. And if you were, you may even pretend to be a conservative, but when you get on the radio, while you put out the official party line, as I like to say, we've got some of the finest conservative commentators that money could buy, because they conceal the truth from the American people. They tell a lot of great stories, but they're not telling the important ones. So go right ahead, Barry.
Well, what I'm going to do now, I'm going to go on. I'm about to write something, and I have my own process. I'll do it tomorrow, probably. How much time do we have?
Oh, we've got about 20 minutes now.
All right. You know what? I'm going to just do a plug before I dive into this, because there's something I have brand new. I have an MP3. Now, an MP3 holds many, many gigabytes of data, and today I found out that my webmaster, of course, prepared my shows for the year 2007. There are 113 shows on this MP3, including many between us, and anyone who wants it, I'm going to give a phone number.
Go right ahead.
All right. It's 904-501-7605. That's 904-501-7605. Now, I don't have an MP3 player, so I'm going to try it in my computer, and then I suppose to download it, you need an MP3 recorder. I know nothing about new technology, but it's there, 113 shows. That's like a week of nonstop me and you for many of them, by the way.
All right, fine. Well, before we go on, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get your books and how, of course, they can get your DVDs as well as that MP3?
Well, the DVDs, you just phone me again, 904-501-7605. My website, it is officially the Barry Chambers website, but if you write www.barrychambers.com, you'll get to it. My books are on lulu.com. It's kind of a revolution in self-publishing. I took my books, and my brilliant webmaster knows how to download them and fix them up, and she put 9 of them up on Lulu. That's lulu.com. Even one in Spanish. My Rabin book is now up in Spanish. And that's what you do, lulu.com, but you have to spell my name under search, and it's C-H-A-M-I-S-H. That's Chamish.
All right, fine. I will tell the listeners that the website is very, very well done. I went there just recently, and I was very impressed by it. So go right ahead, Barry, with your story.
Well, I won't tell you who the webmaster is. She is very shy about it, but she'll be very glad to hear this.
All right.
Now, I always have to keep a secret, you know, but I'm very proud of her. She's done a fine job. Now we go on to what I'm going to write about. And a lot happened this week, and I could write about lots of things, the way I can talk about lots of things, but something happened in America that I think is just remarkable. It just shows how truly god-awful, ignorant the American Jews are. It has to do with Obama. I'm getting Osama and Obama mixed up. Barack, that's right. Osama Barack.
Okay, what about
Barack Osama, whatever you want to call him. He's running for president.
Okay, fine.
We know who he is, right?
Right.
You tell me how you would pronounce it.
Oh, I would call it Obama.
Okay, Obama it is. Okay, now I'm not following American politics. I'm here never to follow local politics. It's dangerous. I had enough of that in Israel. But, you know, Clinton versus Obama. Now, Clinton, you know, her husband, of course, is CFR, and this awful woman went to Israel a few years back, and she was with Arafat's wife, and she nodded her head when she said the Jews were poisoning our people and poisoning our water. And this is a woman who's got a lot of dead people in the wake of the MENA, Arkansas airport scandal and Whitewater. You know, she's bad. She's a very bad person. But we have Obama opposite her. And it's coming out he really, really does not like Israel one little bit. And the details were revealed this week or last week that his own personal pastor, Pastor Jeremiah Wright, is a close associate of Louis Farrakhan, and he just despises Israel. And he's got a press advisor who comes right from the right church, and it's a mess. This guy can't hide anything anymore. He really, really is on the wrong side of everything. So it's now Obama versus Clinton, which is like a case between pee-pee and cocky, and they're supposed to vote for this. But unbelievably, American jury went to Obama's defense. That it was unfair that he was being attacked just because he went to the wrong church. And I'm going to call my article tomorrow something like Uncle Tom's Kabinski or Kabrinsky. I'm going to make it a very Jewish Uncle Tom's cabin, because all these Jewish leaders backed Obama. In a democracy, you choose the person no matter what he believes or what church he goes to. Now,
but I think people, it's not just a matter of he goes to the church. He was actually working as an activist for this minister who really is a radical activist, radical left-wing, radical revolutionary, and that's the church that Obama chose to go to.
It's bad. By any political standards, you're out. I mean, if it was anyone else, this is too deep to be ignored, but look who ignores it. Now, I've got a list of them who wrote this letter to all of American Jewry that we support Obama and his right to go to any church he wants, and it includes Honest Abe Foxman, head of the Anti-Defamation League, which, by the way, is a very, very suspicious organization to begin with. I mean, outright, the priests and pastors they do attack invariably are pro-Israel, or at least from their point of view, they're pro-Israel, and they attack them, Robertson and Falwell and stuff over the years. They have attacked them viciously. They like Obama, of course. And you get the usual Reform Synagogue and Women's Caucus and all this kind of stuff, but there's a real bad one in this list. And that's the head of the OU, the Organization of Orthodox Jews. And I looked at this, and I'm going to remind you of something I believe we have spoken about, and I'm going to remind you anyways. His name is Daniel Abraham. Supposedly a good Jew, except he was probably directly involved in the murder of Wayne Owens.
For our listeners, of course, Wayne Owens was an American congressman who was killed on a beach over there, and I don't know if there's ever even investigated. He just died.
Oh, he had a heart attack while he was walking outside the Tel Aviv Hilton. Shimon Peres and his gang killed him, and I have a book, it's called Shabbat Tzvi, Labor Zionism, the Holocaust, where we dive into Peres' connections and Wayne Owens' connections to the so-called Paris Peace Center. Daniel Abraham was the business partner of Wayne Owens Middle East Economic Peace Center in Washington. There's so much corruption, we can't begin to discuss it. All I'm going to say is that Daniel Abraham is a really, really bad person in every respect. And lo and behold, 2 years ago, he gave the synagogue, the college, it's called Yeshiva University. That's the College of the Orthodox Rabbis of America. Their entire international program was bought and paid for by Daniel Abraham. He built the buildings. He funds the rabbis. That is all Daniel Abraham. And when I look that OU, Orthodox Union, it's called, is supporting Obama and his right to go to a viciously anti-Semitic church and act as, hire members of Pastor Wright's congregation and it's worse, by the way. It's much worse than this, and I'll write it out tomorrow. But the OU is backing him? And I said, there's only one answer for this. They have now been thoroughly turned over. And tomorrow I'm going to write a story in the antiquated Negro dialect of 1850. I'm going to do an Uncle Tom's Cabin about these Uncle Tom's Jews. Uncle Tom Jews, and that's what I'm going to write tomorrow.
Well, I think that it's, as we've said before, so many of the conservative and Christian organizations in the United States have been cleverly infiltrated and compromised, and I'm sure the same thing has happened over in Israel from our conversations. It sounds like most of your formerly very good organizations that stood for Israel have been compromised, and there's really very, very little left, very little opposition. Certainly there's very little opposition here in the United States, as most of our Christian organizations are backing the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're backing the president and torture, because after all, we've got to get the information from those people so we don't have more attacks in America. But we've been almost 6 years, or 7 years since the last attack, over 6 years anyway, and not one more attack. Are we really in a war on terrorism? If we are, we got an awful lot of not very efficient terrorists out there. I mean, all we'd have to do is walk across the border, which you can do almost any place, and then of course you put something on the train tracks to derail a train or start forest fires in the woods. But we don't have the terrorist attacks in America. So if all these terrorists really hate us, why haven't there been more terrorist attacks in America? But you go ahead, Barry.
Well, I'm going to also include in my article something very, very positive in an awful way. I'm going to put a video up tomorrow. It's about those seven children, as young as 12 and as old as 17. They were arrested for settlement building. Of all things, these little girls, and they have now been in jail. They were released for one day because the police went into their houses and got pictures, ordered their families to give up family pictures. These girls would not be tried by a court of Israel. And they have stood in jail. Three of them have been rearrested, and the others are talking what was done to them in jail, because they would not give their names and they would not accept the judgment of an Israeli court. They were forced to strip naked. When they refused, they were restrained and their clothes were stripped off them. They were humiliated. They were starved. They were not permitted to go to the washroom. They had 2 weeks of utter torture. Girls. Little tiny girls, and we've got a film of them talking and their backers backing, and we've got a film of their friends attacking the Israeli police for holding their friends and stripping them and humiliating them in front of the Jerusalem Municipal Court, a court I well know, and I'm going to put this on what I write tomorrow. It'll be on my website a little later in the week. I'm going to include this because I consider what these little girls, tiny little things, 5 feet tall, against these giant policemen, 6 feet and wearing helmets and flak jackets, and they're standing in front of their trucks to get their friends released from prison. I'm going to send that out tomorrow as well.
Okay, fine. Well, anyway, our guest, of course, has been Barry Shamish, who is an Israeli patriot living in America today, but trying to tell the American people what's going on in Israel and even commenting about what's going on in America. And certainly Barry, even though he's not an American citizen, he's married to an American citizen, he recognizes that the same things are happening in the United States that are happening in Israel. There is an elite that rule the world, and of course they tie into the Council on Foreign Relations. And remember, the Council on Foreign Relations is simply a front for an occult organization that was organized back in 1891 by Cecil Rhodes. It ties into the Rhodes Scholarships, international finance, a group of aristocrats who thinks that they have the right to rule the world. That's their goal. And, of course, you cannot belong to the Council on Foreign Relations and be a good American, because their goal is to do away with sovereignty and merge us into a world government, the end of freedom as we know it. We'll be right back in just a moment to wrap up today's program. Well, Barry, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
It's funny you should mention the CFR, because in this article sent to me about Obama, every single backer of his, and the same with John Kerry, every one of them are CFR. Kerry, of course, is CFR. Well, that goes without saying. I'm not getting involved in the sense that I was involved in Israel, but this election is just rigged by the CFR.
Of course they are. I mean, certainly both Edwards and Hillary on the Democratic side have CFR advisors, and of course all of the major candidates on the Republican side, with the exception of Ron Paul, are subservient to the CFR. That would include, of course, Mitt Romney and Huckabee and McCain and Thompson and Giuliani. It's all the same. Doesn't make one dime's worth of difference.
Oh, you forgot the big one for CFR. He got the Kissinger and Joe Lieberman, both high-ranking CFR members, to back him, and that's John McCain.
Right, right.
All right, so I'm going to... Now, my concern is the Jews and them gathering together to defend the right of Obama to be a member of a viciously anti-Semitic and anti-Israel church in Chicago, and he's got the right in America to do that. That's what I'm going to do tomorrow, because my role, one way or another, is the Jewish role in all this, and it is really shameful what's going on in America. I'm actually going to do an American... I'm going to do something about America tomorrow and the Jews who run this place.
All right, fine, but I think that certainly Obama has the right to go to any church he wants to, but we have the right to know that he's going to an anti-Semitic, a radical church and associated with a minister, a black minister, who's a real radical, who has actually been extremely critical of America and certainly supports Louis Farrakhan, who supports the Arabs over there in the Near East. I mean, these things are all anti-American. We can be critical of America, but we can still love America. We just don't like the people who control it. But Farrakhan, well, of course, the pictures that they have of him refusing to salute the American flag, and when everybody else is mouthing the words of the Pledge of Allegiance, why, he has his hands at his side and not doing anything. Does Obama really love America? And if he won't salute the flag, now, of course, he's saluting it because it's called attention to it, but the pictures are there. You can see them up on the Internet. He seems to be marching to a different drumbeat. Perhaps he worships a different god. Barry, goodbye. God bless you. Thanks so much.
See you tomorrow.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Barry Shamish. Always interesting, and of course, we'll be having some open line programs. If you want to disagree with Barry or anything that's said here, we always appreciate your calls. Under any circumstances, this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We depend upon you out there in listening audience for your help. And if you agree with me, that were involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political and ideological battlefield. If you'd like to help us in what we're doing as we reach out 5 hours every day on almost 60 different outlets every single week, we'd love to hear from you. And then, of course, we hope that you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com and listen to our programs there. You can listen to our live internet programs 4 hours a day. You can certainly listen to our archive programs. You can listen to our MP3 programs. You can listen to our satellite feed 9 hours a day simply on Radio Liberty, and the rest of the time for Joyce Riley and the other people on the on our satellite with us. And this is simply a satellite the hookup, but of course we do have an opportunity to reach people all over the world on Telstar 5. And if you'd like to know how to get an inexpensive satellite with a lot of great programming on it that doesn't have a monthly fee, you give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. To understand what's really going on in the world today, and forget about the elections, forget about the war, all of these things are simply distractions, tragic distractions, admittedly, but distractions. You really need to understand the spiritual forces that are at work, and if you have not yet seen the videos or DVDs, they sold their souls for rock and roll. They sold their souls for rock and roll. The 3 hour, the 4 hour, the 10 hour version, you need to get them. You need to get Chris Pinto's DVDs, Megiddo 1, Megiddo 2. They tell you the story of what's going on in the world from a spiritual point of view, and then his excellent DVD, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, takes you into the secret societies that were here in the United States in the 1600s and the 1700s. And, of course, they led to the moral depravity that actually had taken over America by 1730, and it was only the First Great Awakening under Jonathan Edwards and John Wesley and the others that that brought America back and, of course, led to the American Revolution. And then the Second Great Awakening in 1830, because the dark spiritual forces had once again created a spirit of depravity. But, of course, we did not have another Great Awakening in 1930, and the only thing that's going to save America is a revival where people once again fear our Lord as well as worship Him. But, of course, we don't teach that in churches anymore because it's not popular. We don't even talk much about hell or about judgment because God doesn't judge anyone. Everybody's loved and everybody's going to be just fine. You can go ahead and do whatever you want to. And if that's the case, we really don't need a Savior, do we? Well, I believe that so much of the teaching today is wrong because I believe that the Protestant and Catholic seminaries were infiltrated 50 to 100 years ago as they changed the message and eventually the music of our churches. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. Let me suggest the DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, The Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital, a two-part series of excellent professionally done DVDs, award-winning. The producer actually produced a film or gave a speech for us. It's called The Atlantis Connection, about how, of course, the occultists have always intended that America would lead the world into the one-world government. That's why we're fighting over in Iraq. It's not for oil. It's not for Israel. It's not, to preserve our money or to get Saddam Hussein out of power. It's all about the ultimate plan, the New World Order, the New World Religion, the New World Leader. And they're using the financial and military power of the United States to accomplish that. If you haven't heard my talk on the forbidden secret, you need it. And then our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty for our provision.
You're listening to the Global Star Radio Network, located at Telstar 5 KU band, frequency 11836, symbol rate 20770. Thank you for listening.
News on the Information Radio Network. I'm Greg Moore. After his win in South Carolina yesterday, John McCain has become the target of his presidential rivals. Rudy Giuliani is criticizing McCain's lack of executive decision-making experience. The former New York mayor is also attacking McCain for voting against the Bush tax cuts on two occasions. McCain responded to the attacks on CNN, saying he now supports making the cuts permanent, and anything less would amount to a tax increase. Noting that Giuliani hasn't won a nominating contest yet, McCain says he can understand why Giuliani would attack the frontrunner. Mitt Romney is also on the attack, painting McCain as a Washington insider. Romney says he doesn't think change can be made in Washington by somebody who's been part of it for so long. Meantime, aides to Fred Thompson say they don't expect him to make a decision as to whether he'll stay in the GOP race until after the weekend. This is IRN.
Sometimes you feel like you're just a number. To the banks, the credit card companies, the lenders and financial institutions, you are just a number. Your credit score. And unless that number is above their standards, you get stuck paying more for everything. Hi, I'm John Commuta, creator of the Transforming Debt into Wealth system. If you don't have perfect credit, banks will either take advantage of you or slam the door in your face. But I want to send you a free tape that shows you how my proven system will wipe the slate clean once and for all. My system doesn't just raise your credit score, it will permanently insulate your credit status so it can never come back to haunt you again. It works no matter how bad your credit is or how much debt you have. Call today and I'll send you a free tape showing you the power of my proven system. You can hit the reset button on your credit score and wipe the slate clean. Let me show you how. Call right now to get my free tape. 1-800-900-1672. That's 1-800-900-1672. 1-800-900-1672.
Nearly 40 years after the assassination of Martin Luther King Jr., some say his legacy ignores the full complexity of the man and his message. Correspondent Brian Thomas.
Everyone knows the I Have a Dream speech, but one expert says we don't know what that dream was. By taking on issues beyond segregation, King had lost the support of many newspapers and magazines. So says Harvard Sitkoff, professor of history at the University of New Hampshire, who recently published a book on King. Another expert says study of King has not translated into the popular perception of him and the civil rights movement. And another expert says by putting King on a pedestal of perfection, we fail to acknowledge his complex views, making it impossible both for us to find new leaders and to aspire to leadership. I'm Brian Thomas.
Fire officials in Massachusetts are calling a 7-alarm blaze that torched 14 buildings this morning suspicious. One person was injured. Dozens more are homeless in Lawrence, Massachusetts. For the latest news and analysis, log on to irnnews.com.
Is life moving too fast? If you're self-employed or a small business owner, you have no choice but to move as fast as you can. Sometimes you move so fast you don't take a close look at life's details. When was the last time you looked at your health insurance? If you don't have health insurance or if you have the wrong coverage, serious medical bills could mount up. That's where the Mega Life and Health Insurance Company comes in.
Call 877-735-6968. That's 877-735-6968.
With news on the Information Radio Network, I'm Greg Moore. President Bush is calling on the nation to honor Martin Luther King by helping those in need. More from correspondent Sagar Magani.
At the library named after King here in Washington, the president joined in story time with some kids who grew shy and quiet with him there.
How can you help make the world a better place? Someone tell me? How? Someone know? How can you make the world a better place?
Love your neighbor.
The president later calling King a towering figure in American history and said the federal holiday honoring him is fitting.
Opportunity to renew our deep desire for America to be a hope of land of promise for everybody.
Sagar Magani, Washington.
Bush said helping others should happen every day and not just on the Martin Luther King holiday. You're listening to news on the Information Radio Network.
Stop high gasoline prices from eating up your paycheck. Power Plus MPG helps you put more money in your bank and less in your tank. It's your opportunity to help others save money on their gasoline and help make yourself financially secure. Dream Life Products, a 10-year-old company founded on Christian principles, could be just what you need. Check us out at 866-992-4464 or on the web at xbigoil.com. Get our free information package and get started saving today with Power Plus MPG. Better call now, 866-992-4464.
This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Chrisman. Viewpoint is a one-hour open-line talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. To express your viewpoint, please call 804-754-1988. That's 804-754-1988. And now, with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Chrisman.
The secret of the Lord is with those that fear Him, and to them He will reveal His plans and His purposes. Welcome to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. Today, we talk about a subject that has well fallen on very, very hard times in the church for at least 40 years, if not 50. It's called the fear of the Lord. Have you ever stopped to think about why God would say in His Word that the secret of the Lord is with those that fear Him? When we so much today want to run from the very idea of the fear of the Lord, in fact, we're given the impression from pulpit to pew that the fear of the Lord is something to be fled from. It's something to be avoided at all costs, because isn't God a loving God? Well, yes, if God is a loving God and that is His character, then why would He say over and over in His Word that we should fear Him? Why does He say that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom? If we lose the fear of the Lord in our lives, in our congregations, or yes, even in our churches, could it be that we lose our wisdom? And if we lose our wisdom, how can we conduct ourselves in a way that is pleasing to God? Now maybe it makes a little more sense when we go back to Psalm 25, where God says the secret of the Lord is with those that fear Him, and to them He will show His covenant. Could it be that even the very covenant of God Himself will not be revealed to us if we don't truly and rightly fear Him? Are you interested? Could it be that perhaps the vast array of decadent statistics in our land over the past 40 years are a reflection of the loss of the fear of the Lord in the land? What does it mean to be a God-fearing person? What does it mean to be a God-fearing nation? Does it mean to believe that there's a God? Does it mean to use His name in the Pledge of Allegiance or on our coins? What does it mean to be God-fearing? All of that here today on Viewpoint. Viewpoint does determine destiny, no question about it. I'm glad that you joined us, and please don't turn that dial, friend, because your destiny could rest on your understanding of what we talk about here today on this program. There are no neutral viewpoints. All viewpoints determine destiny. They really do. There are no neutral viewpoints. So please stay tuned. We have a special guest joining us here today, Arnold Frank. He's written a book called The Fear of God, A Forgotten Doctrine. Nothing could be right on the money more than that, Arnold. It's good to have you on the program.
Thank you for this opportunity. Appreciate it.
Well, it's a special privilege, and when I saw your book come across my path, I thought, you know, we've got to do this because it's almost impossible to get a word in edgeways talking about the fear of the Lord in this country.
That's right.
Well, what prompted you to write the book?
Well, it worked this way. Oh, for many years, I've read through the Bible through from beginning to end, and always in a different translation or version of the Bible. Oh, about 1995, a friend of mine gave me a series of tapes, five tapes on the fear of God by a well-known international preacher.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, well, wait a minute. I've been reading this Bible through all this time, and he's seeing things that I haven't seen.
Mm-hmm.
So the next year, I got a different Bible, and I went through it again, and I began to journal. Every time the fear of any kind, fear of animals, fear of angels, I just took it all down.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, the dominant theme was the fear of God. And so when I accumulated all those things, I said, I got to do something about this. Well, I'd always wanted to write a book, but I never found a subject. Well, last I found the subject.
So the subject chased you down.
The subject chased me down.
Well, good for you. I'm glad that it did. You know, the Bible says that the fear of man is a snare, but it never says the fear of the Lord's a snare.
That's right. It doesn't say that.
Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
But what I've learned, Arnold, is if you don't fear God, you will fear man.
Exactly. And that's what I deal with in chapter 6 of my book.
Hmm. Well, I'm just delighted that you've written the book, and we're going to have a very open conversation here. I want you to know we do conversations, we don't do interviews, and so I want you to just be very free to have an interchange like we're sitting here in the living room. Can we do that?
Good enough.
All right. You say in your book that ours is a day much like that of Judges. Every man did that which was right in his own eyes. Our churches are marked by irreverence, immorality, and hypocrisy. This problem arises from a lack of the fear of God. What do you mean?
I mean by that that the fear of God is best understood as a positive attitude toward God that comes when a person is converted to God by grace, in which he wants to serve God. He wants to do everything that would please God, and to do nothing which would displease him, and that would be his agenda for every day.
Isn't that what David's agenda was? Isn't that why one of the reasons why God called him a man after his own heart?
Yes, sure.
When Christians are ignorant of the fear of God, they fail to live their lives aware of the presence of God, to whom they must give an answer. You know, it just seems to me, Arnold, that there is this unspoken sense, sometimes it's even spoken, that among professing Christians, if you profess the name of Christ, you don't have to live righteously, you don't have to live a holy life, all you got to do is make a blithe profession of faith, you're in like Flint, you've got a permanent ticket to the pearly gates. Where's the need for the fear of the Lord in all of that? God loves me so much that he will wink at all my sin.
Well, you know, it kind of says, in a sense, it says, in our conversion, we were created, we were delivered from the sins of our youth, or of our ignorance, and we were saved so that we might sin without consequences. if you get my meaning.
Well, I do, but that's totally the opposite of everything the Bible teaches from Genesis 1 to Revelation 21 or 22. Just the opposite is presented as a continuing theme. How could we have gotten so far off base? We want to talk a little bit more about that as we explore this idea of the fear of the Lord. Friends, I want to urge you to get a copy of Arnold's book because I think it's going to trigger a whole lot of thinking in your mind and heart. And we need some thinking triggered in our minds and hearts if Jesus is coming soon. Your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries will put the fear of God in your heart. We don't want to engender an unrighteous fear in your mind, but we do want a righteous fear of the Lord in your heart. And we need to understand this because there is a lot of confusion. So give us a call, 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. If you're writing a check and $4 for postage and handling, get it on our website, saveus.org. Friends, this is important stuff here on the marriage of the second coming. If we're serious about getting ready, preparing the way of the Lord for history's final hour, we'll be right back.
Did you hear about the latest study from a Duke University sociologist? It's called Social Isolation in America, and it's been the talk of columnists and news articles everywhere. As one columnist wrote, this story could just as well have been called Friendless in America. One-fourth of all Americans admit they have no one to talk with about important matters. Another quarter say they have only one friend. What's missing? What's missing is good old-fashioned hospitality. Our hyper-individualism is actually killing us. That's why Chuck and Kathy Christmeyer's recent book, The Power of Hospitality, is so important for you and all of us, even our churches. When 70% of pastors admit they have no friends, we're in trouble. So get your copy of The Power of Hospitality today for your gift of $16 to Save America Ministries. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. The Power of Hospitality will change your life. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA.
Is the IRS ruining your life? Are you afraid of losing everything? You can end the despair you feel right now. Get ready to write down an important phone number you're going to need to help solve your IRS nightmare. The number is 800-584-1095.
Hello, I'm John Harris, president of J.K. Harris & Company, the nation's largest tax representation firm. IRS problems have a way of ruining every aspect of your life if you let them. They don't go away on their own. The IRS can attach your wages, your pension, your savings, even your Social Security check. Over the past decade, the tax team at J.K. Harris has successfully negotiated settlements for our clients, saving them millions of dollars.
If you owe the IRS back taxes, call J.K. Harris at 800-584-1095. You may qualify to dramatically reduce your tax debt. Call 800-584-1095. That's 800-584-1095.
To Viewpoint, I'm Chuck Christmeyer. There's a whole lot of confusion today that exists with respect to the idea of the fear of God. Some look at it as an Old Testament concept, and yet you can find it throughout the entire Bible, New Testament or Old Testament. It's a major theme of the Bible on three occasions in the book of Revelation. The worship that's going to prevail in the new heavens and the new earth is characterized as being in the fear of God. In spite of the prominence, though, of this idea in the Bible, its presence in contemporary Christian worship, in preaching, in publications, is almost totally absent. In fact, even modern translations of the Bible regularly translate the original words for fear as reverence or awesome, terms that are so broad as to lose much of the sense of what the fear of God is meant to convey. So how can we get our minds and our hearts around this essential understanding and concept, the fear of the Lord? If indeed the secret of the Lord is with those who fear Him, and only to those He will reveal His covenant. It sounds pretty important, doesn't it? When you think that the Bible says that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, if we don't have the fear of the Lord, how then can we expect to have God's wisdom? You see, it could very well be that we've been cutting ourselves off from two major things. One, wisdom, and the other, God's covenant, by just blindly, almost blatantly sometimes, rejecting the whole idea, the fear of the Lord. Viewpoint really does determine destiny. Today on Viewpoint, our special guest, Arnold Frank, with his book, The Fear of God, A Forgotten Doctrine. Arnold, we were chatting during the break that there are a variety of ways of looking at the word fear. Some can be extremely negative. Others can be positive. How is it we're so tangled up on this?
Well, we're tangled up on it because we haven't heard any preaching on it. You had said some while ago about the last 40 years, it seems to me that the preaching of the fear of God or the mention of it in sermons goes back even to the 1800s. The last great emphasis upon the fear of God was the period of about the 150 years of the Puritan. And we got the wonderful works coming down to us today and being republished. And so it's coming back into a view at least, if not popularity.
Well, you lose themes, you lose emphases in your life through what I call drift. In fact, a good brother wrote a book called Dealing with Drift in the Body of Christ. And, if we're not anchored tightly to the shore of God's Word, and committed absolutely to faithfully being in it and being faithful in its presentation, over a period of time, we begin to drift in our teaching, in our thinking, and pretty soon, human nature being what it is, we don't talk about things that we think might be unpleasant or have potentially unpleasant consequences. We only talk about that which makes us feel good.
Well, that's exactly right. We tend to drift toward the things that do make us feel good, and love makes us feel good. And
yet it was a loving God who talks about the necessity of fearing him.
Exactly right.
So there must be something in the character of God. You know, I think one of the problems that we have is that we misrepresent the character of God so often these days. We want to present a God who is a God that is love. Well, yes, God is love, no question about it. But he's also justice and judgment and truth and mercy. He's holiness, he's righteousness, he's all of them in an uncompromised, both and hardcore way, isn't he?
That's right. And interestingly enough, when one really takes a look at the scriptures, it would be fair to say, be honest to say, that you can interchange those two words, love and fear, and you'll have the same meaning for both, properly understood. Now, in Deuteronomy chapter 6, early on, both the love and the fear of God are mentioned almost in the same breath.
Well, what do you do with the book of Hebrews, where it says that, we should fear the Lord because our God is a consuming fire?
Well, we should fear him for that. We should fear offending our God, and yet when it's a child of God who offends God, he still needs to fear him, but he needs to understand that this God is his father, and as his father, he is going to chasten him. He's going to discipline him, and sometimes the discipline comes very severely.
Well, and it's true, and it's really not that difficult to understand, I don't think, if we look at the natural relationship between a father and son, or father and daughter. Fathers, if they're truly fathers, not just sperm donors, but truly fathers, they do have an encompassing love for their child, for their daughter, for their son, and in that they're thinking good thoughts toward their son, toward their daughter. They have good purposes. They have holy purposes and righteous purposes, it seems to me.
Yes.
But also, if that son or that daughter doesn't line up with the ways of the father's household and disagrees, rebels, disobeys, they can expect some unpleasant consequences and fear their father's response.
And interestingly enough, in that father's response, which is chastening or discipline, the word that's used there in the original is the word for paideia, which is a word for children.
Mm-hmm.
And so a believer who's been acting out and he's really feeling the hammer of God needs to realize that God's purpose in him is to be his pediatrician, to make him to grow up to be a real mature person, whatever it takes.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I think about what Jesus said about children, he said, unless you become as a little child, you can't even see the kingdom of God. And we haven't really thought very seriously about the implications of that, I don't think. But one of those is if a child, realizes that their parent basically loves them, but that they're still their parent and they have to obey them. There is a sense of childlike faith and trust and respect there as well. The child realizes the parent does love them, but there are going to be consequences if you violate the principles of that love.
And children can put two and two together, and they know that the kind of life that pleases their father and the kind of life that makes happiness in the home is a life in which the child seeks to obey the father out of love and seeks not to make him angry out of love.
Exactly. So there's a motivation of the heart. That's much of the heart of what you're trying to convey in your book, isn't it?
That's exactly right. It's a matter of heart. Interesting, and an interesting comment back in the Psalm 130, it says, psalmist is talking about his awareness of his sins and so forth. But he's still heading on up the hill to Jerusalem for worship, because he says, but there is forgiveness with you that you may be feared. That's a strange combination of words in our hearing.
Yeah.
But what does he mean by that? Well, I think we have to take that over to Proverbs 1. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, or beginning of knowledge. And so that's where wisdom begins, when we are forgiven of our sins, when we come into the family, know the grace of Christ in the Father that does totally forgive us our sins. It leads us into a life of wisdom. And the question is, what's that wisdom about? And that wisdom has a word that means has to do with skillfulness in something or other.
Mm-hmm.
Skillfulness in living. It's the same word that when Moses was being told to build a tabernacle, and he had to have certain men to work with gold and silver and precious gems and so on, and they were given, and they used the same word, they were given the skill to know how to cut diamonds, how to deal with gold and silver and things like that. So it means like living skillfully in whatever realm we're in.
And we certainly want to be able to do that. But what if we begin to disagree with what God has said? What if, for instance, God says that we should forgive, and that if we will not forgive others their sins and their trespasses against us, neither will our Heavenly Father forgive us. But we decide, God loves me so much that I don't really have to forgive. Now what?
God loves me, or God loves you so much that he's going to insist on it. He wants to conform it into the image of his son.
Mm.
And his son always did the things that pleased his father. He says that in John 8:39.
In fact, the very thing that God wanted to display through Jesus Christ was that finally, after 6,000 years of history, a man was going to obey God from his heart.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that what Jesus was all about?
Yes, and he's a God-man.
And it says that he learned obedience through the things that he suffered, right there in the book of Hebrews.
That's right, exactly.
So even Jesus had to have this, and had to live out this concept of the fear of the Lord, didn't he?
Yes. It is interesting to know that way back in Isaiah 11, when it told about Jesus coming, that he would be filled with wisdom and knowledge and understanding and the fear of the Lord.
Isn't that, it doesn't seem right to us as we think about Jesus, but if we don't understand that he had to walk in the fear of the Lord, he couldn't have become our Savior, because he had to be tempted in all manner like as we, yet without sin.
True enough. And in spite of the fact that he was without sin, he did also go to the cross. But on the cross, he still feared the Father.
Well, indeed he did, because there in Gethsemane,
right,
when everything in his fleshly, mortal body screamed against fulfilling the Father's will, he cried out. Drops like sweat, like blood, came out of him. And he said, Father, if there's any way, deliver me from this cup, but nevertheless, thy will be done. Now, in that statement, there is implicit the fear of the Lord, isn't there?
That's the exact clue. There's not a better way to point that out than that way.
Yeah. And so when we are facing a situation, like someone who recently called me up in marital turmoil, deeply stressed, and they realize that God hates putting away, he hates divorce, and that remarriage when our spouse is living is adultery, they have to make a choice as a professing child of God. Will I do the Master's will or not? Will I please him, or will I please my flesh? And if I choose to go ahead and divorce my spouse when God says very clearly, I hate that, are we fearing the Lord?
Well, we're not fearing the Lord, and if that keeps up, it's going to be some question in my mind if this person has really got the work in his heart to begin with.
Well, exactly, and Malachi spoke to that before even the New Covenant. We'll talk about that when we get back. Friends, there really are practical applications to this idea of the fear of the Lord, and we need to talk about it because Jesus is coming soon. All you have to do is look at the signs of the times being fulfilled at breathtaking speed before our very eyes. We'll be talking about that tomorrow. You don't want to miss tomorrow's program. Stay with us. Get a copy of this great book, The Fear of God. You'll get to $15 or more to Save America Ministries. We'll be right back.
With news on the Information Radio Network, I'm Greg Moore. After his win in South Carolina yesterday, John McCain has become the target of his presidential rivals. Rudy Giuliani is criticizing McCain's lack of executive decision-making experience. The former New York mayor is also attacking McCain for voting against the Bush tax cuts on two occasions. McCain responded to the attacks on CNN, saying he now supports making the cuts permanent, and anything less would amount to a tax increase. Noting that Giuliani hasn't won a nominating contest yet, McCain says he can understand why Giuliani would attack the frontrunner. Mitt Romney is also on the attack, painting McCain as a Washington insider. Romney says he doesn't think change can be made in Washington by somebody who's been part of it for so long. Meantime, aides to Fred Thompson say they don't expect him to make a decision as to whether he'll stay in the GOP race until after the weekend. This is IRN.
Have you ever thought about how to avoid becoming poor?
Good question. From a man who has many of the answers. Your Money, Your Future, a powerful DVD program from Dr. Larry Bates, economist, former banker, best-selling author, world-renowned financial and political expert. He tells it like it will be in terms we can all understand. The power behind the power is wielding its power to make us all equal. Equally poor. You need to know how to keep them from it. And Dr. Bates gives us a heads-up on the lowdown.
The private bankers have more power than the President of the United States.
Dr. Bates explains how the monopoly men run the Fed, Social Security, even what assets to hold in the perilous times ahead. Now's the time to order your copy of Your Money, Your Future, Dr. Bates' powerful, revealing DVD that could be your most important investment in your future. It's only $19.95 plus shipping and handling. So call now, 1-800-336-7000, and order yours. That's 800-336-7000, 800-336-7000. It's Your Money. Learn how to handle it.
With an IRN Business News Update, I'm Dick Shannon. An unusually large share of workers have been out of work for more than 6 months, even as overall unemployment has remained relatively low, a weakness that some analysts say threatens to intensify the impact of the unfolding economic downturn. In November, nearly 1.4 million people, almost one in five of those unemployed, have been jobless for at least 27 weeks. A 2004 study finding now that workers who lost jobs in 2001 to 2003 took an average pay cut of 17% in their new jobs, more than double the average cut of those displaced in the late 1990s. Those workers, now white-collar and college-educated workers with long work experiences, the already high rate of long-term unemployment is likely to grow, according to analysts, as it has during past slowdowns, a prospect that spawned calls in Congress and on the presidential campaign trail to extend unemployment benefits and expand tax cuts to protect jobs and fuel the economy. With an IRN Business News Update, I'm Dick Shannon.
We're confronting the deepest issues that touch our hearts and our homes from God's eternal perspective and viewpoint here today on Viewpoint. We're talking about the fear of God or the fear of the Lord. And this is something that has been missing in the life of the church, largely, certainly in the West. Not nearly as much in the church in Eastern countries and so on, but in the West, by and large, and what we have been exporting into Africa and some other areas of the country, South America, has been a gospel without the fear of the Lord. And in large measure, the prosperity gospel is a gospel without the fear of the Lord. And so it's perverted. It's not the whole truth. It's only a part of the truth that sounds convenient and markets well. The fear of the Lord is never marketed well from Genesis through the end of Revelation or today. But it reveals part of the character of God. In fact, the whole of the character of God, for he is both loving and justice and judgment, and he is truth. He's not just mercy, he is truth. And what he wants to have happen is for mercy and truth to meet together, righteousness and peace to kiss each other. And they can do that with a proper understanding of the fear of the Lord. A lot of confusion exists today with respect to the fear of God. Again, some see it as an Old Testament concept, but the reality is it's woven throughout the entire Bible from Genesis to Revelation. Others find the doctrine confusing. After all, didn't the Apostle Paul claim to be motivated by the fear of God, and yet he talks about the spirit of adoption without the spirit of bondage, again, to fear? So, how are we supposed to figure this out? And then the Apostle John says there is no fear in love, but perfect love casts out fear. But then he says, this is the love of God, that you keep his commandments, and they're not grievous. You see, we have been quoting individual scriptures completely out of their biblical context, and we have lost the fear of the Lord as a result. Our special guest today, Arnold Frank, with his wonderful book, The Fear of God, A Forgotten Doctrine. We are totally confused in God's own house, aren't we, Arnold?
Yes. You know, I would want our listeners, as I would want my congregation, to be very sure about this. When we're born again, it's just like being born the first time. We come with a whole package there. It's in tiny form, but it's all there.
Mm-hmm.
When we are born again, we come, our first evidences of our new birth is repentance of sin and faith in Christ. But also in that new birth, there's also the concept, there's an instinct of the fear of God. It's an instinct that wants to please the Father.
All right.
Who has birthed me. Mm-hmm. Who has adopted me.
You're in relationship. You want to please those that are in your relationship with, don't you?
That's right.
So what if we don't want to please? Or we say we want to please, but then purposely go out and don't do what the person that we say we're in relationship with wants? What do you say about that?
Well, we have to draw certain conclusions about that. It depends on how long that goes on.
Yeah. Well, here's what Malachi did.
Yeah.
Okay. He was addressing this very idea with the religious leaders of his day.
Yes.
He says, this you have done, again, covering the altar of the Lord with your tears and weeping and crying. In other words, they had a mess. And they were crying out to God, and tears were spilling all over the altar. It sounded like a really spiritual revival. Mm-hmm. But Malachi saw right through it all. Here's what he said. Insomuch that he, that is God, is not regarding your offering anymore or receiving it with goodwill at your hand. Now, these are his children. He said, I'm not receiving your offerings. I'm not receiving your tears with goodwill. It's all a bunch of pretense. Because, here's what Malachi says, because the Lord has been witness between you and the wife of your youth, against whom you have dealt treacherously. Yet she was your companion, the wife of your covenant. Didn't he make you one, that he could make a godly seed? Therefore, take heed to your spirit, and let none deal treacherously against the wife of his youth. For the Lord, the God of Israel, said that he hates divorce. He hates putting away. Therefore, take heed to your spirit. Don't deal treacherously. Now, listen to this, Arnold. He says, you have wearied the Lord with your words. Yet you say, wherein have we wearied him? He said, when you said, everyone that does evil is good, in other words, everyone that's divorcing their spouse is good in the sight of the Lord. And then he finishes with this question, where is the God of judgment? In other words, where is the God that you should be fearing? He's God. He's spoken on this. Why is it you can't conform to his word, his will, and his ways in the matter of your marriages? How do you respond?
Well, that's choosing Malachi is very good because he deals with the fear of God on every chapter, almost every line.
You're right, he does.
Yes, and in doing so, he demonstrates what this fear of God is about. It's a great amount about living life now, living life between the first and second coming.
Mm-hmm.
It's the practical stuff.
Yeah.
It has to do with marriage. Of course, that's the most fundamental relationship of human life.
And it's to relate or display the glory of God in our relationship with Christ in the earth, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we can understand that because when God created man, he created woman, and he wanted them to have children. As far as I'm concerned, that early in the Bible, we should be able to understand that God's a triune God.
Mm-hmm.
There are three persons there, just as there are three persons in a family. And that relationship of husband to wife is an inviolate relationship. Because of sin, we know that divorce is allowed on some circumstances, but not on a lot, only on two.
Yeah, I even question that. I think it's a misreading of the scripture that brings us to that conclusion. But nevertheless, we've come to the place now, Arnold, where the divorce rate in the church for the last 15 years has equal or exceeded that of the nation every year. The divorce rate among our pastors is the second highest of all professions in the country, equal to that of their parishioners. And the divorce rate in the Bible Belt of America, where the greatest concentration of so-called Bible-believing Christians is, the divorce rate's been 50% higher than the nation's whole. What do you make of that in the light of the fear of the Lord? Do we have fear of the Lord in the land? In the church?
I guess
in the Bible Belt?
We've got too much of the world in the church and too little of the church in the world. Of a sound church. Right.
I think it is the clearest litmus paper test of our time to demonstrate we don't even have a pretense of the fear of the Lord from pulpit to pew anymore.
Right.
So where do we go from here?
Well, what we have to
Is there hope for us?
Excuse me?
Is there hope for us?
Sure, there's hope.
All right.
Where there's life, there's hope. Right.
Until Jesus comes back and we're still alive, there's hope, isn't there?
Exactly right.
So where is our hope?
But the hope comes from a honest reading of the Scripture,
mm-hmm.
a holistic preaching of the Scripture, a humble reception of the word preached. And God forbid that men would stand in the pulpit, declare themselves to be the messenger of God, and purposely overlook some of its most profound and central doctrines.
You know what I think's happened? Our pastors and parachurch leaders and broadcasters have baptized themselves with the fear of man, and they no longer fear the Lord. They're afraid of man. They're afraid that their listeners and their constituencies and the people in their congregations will vote with their feet and with their pocketbook, and they won't be able to build their mega churches anymore.
Mm-hmm. I believe that's true. And the fear of man is such a terrible sin that way back in Revelation 21, the list of the group of those who are fit candidates for hell, it lists the ones who are fearful. The ones who are unbelievers in mm-hmm. the sense that they are fears of man and not fears of God. And
isn't that fascinating?
That leads the list.
And yet, that leads the list of those that are going to be cast in the lake with fire.
That's right.
The ones who fear man as a characteristic of their unbelief.
That's right.
Wow. That's potent.
It is important.
Friends, you got to get a copy of Arnold's book. This really is so important. You can't ignore it. You can't put your hand over your eye like a two-year-old and say, "Look, God, you can't see me." He's God. He's spoken. And his word will not return void for those who believe it or for those who don't. It will not return void. Got to get a copy of the book, The Fear of God, A Forgotten Doctrine. Your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries will put it in your hands. Give us a call. 1-800-SAVE-USA, 1-800-SAVE-USA, or write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255, writing a check at $4 for postage and handling. Tell your friends about the program. Tell them on the website, saveus.org. We'll be right back.
There, Chuck.
The promised land was straight ahead. God had a showdown with Earth's greatest power broker, Pharaoh, demanding he release God's son Israel from the bondage of Egypt. But after 40 years in the wilderness, the Lord could never get the spirit of Egypt out of his children. Only 2 out of 600,000 male descendants of Abraham were allowed into the promised land. Does this apply to us? Over 400 times from Genesis to Revelation, we find the theme, out of Egypt. The Apostle Paul said, "All these things happen to warn us upon whom the ends of the world are come." Yet, American Christians, on the near edge of the second coming, are living in the spirit of Egypt as never before. That's why Chuck Chrismeyer's new book, Out of Egypt, is essential. Get your copy of Out of Egypt today for your gift of $17 to Save America Ministries. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA. Build End Time Trust for End Time Trials. Call 1-800-SAVE-USA. That's 1-800-SAVE-USA.
6. That's the number. 6 out of 10 Americans are now in debt. So if you're in trouble with debt, you're not alone. If your credit card bills are piling up, call Consolidated Credit now. The Freedom Quest program from Consolidated Credit can get the credit card companies to reduce or eliminate your interest. They'll consolidate your bills into one easy payment, and they'll cut your monthly payments by up to 50%. They're the experts, and that's why over 5 million people have called Consolidated Credit. 6 out of 10 people may be in debt, but one call to Consolidated Credit can get you out. They're the Freedom People. Only Consolidated Credit has the Freedom Quest program. Call now. 1-800-897-8372. 1-800-897-8372. Consolidated Credit. When credit card debt is the problem, they're the solution.
5701 West Sunrise Boulevard, Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Licensed by New York State Banking Department. Licensed Debt Management Service Provider, Maryland 149.
Welcome back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. Today we're talking about the fear of the Lord. It's a fascinating subject that has been ignored for so long, partly because of misconception, always thinking of it as in a very negative way, and somehow if God is love, he wouldn't want us to fear him, and we think lovey-dovey things about God as if he is a cosmic Santa Claus with a long white beard that just constantly wants to stroke his children. Not quite a proper image of God. God has revealed the image of himself in his own word, how he wants us to understand him. He wants us to know that he is love. He also wants us to know that he is truth. He wants us to know that he is mercy, but also that he is justice and judgment. He wants us to know him in all of those facets so that we can truly love him for who he is and not who we want him to be. And therein lies the problem. April 5th, 1993, Time Magazine had on its front cover a cross. It says, "The Generation That Forgot God." You open the magazine to its feature article called "The Church Search." Right there, after Gulf War I, men were flooding back to churches in America, and Time Magazine said church would never again be the same. Why? Listen to what they said. They had a piercing understanding of what was happening in the minds and hearts of people going to church in America. They said Americans were looking for a custom-made God, one made in their own image. In other words, Americans were reconceiving, reimagining, redefining, literally building their own God the way they wanted him to look, instead of the way God reveals himself. But God, you see, reveals himself in such a way that he wants his children, true children, to fear him, to have an awesome, reverential respect for him and for his word, such that they will do anything to avoid disobeying him. Arnold, is that true?
It's exactly true. And idea of fear of God, it is so horizontal in the sense that it covers everything that we do in life. I think it's important for us to realize that every day, all day, we are being tested by our Father. And
why would a loving God test his children? Isn't God just receiving us unconditionally?
Well, he tests us because he does not want us where we are. He wants us to where he wants us to be.
And he
That's
wants,
a journey.
He's actually testing our love, too, isn't he?
Exactly.
Jesus' love was tested. He said he learned obedience through the things that he suffered. Mm-hmm. We don't understand that about Jesus, do we?
I think we should understand that in the scriptures, wherever fear is spoken about as being obedient to God, you could insert the word love. I maintain that love and fear are fraternal twins.
Well, I agree with you. They're like opposite sides of the same coin, aren't they?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and maybe one of the problems is that we've misdefined the word love. We don't understand the love of God any more than we understand the fear of the Lord.
It's a tough love.
It is, just like a father's love.
Mm-hmm.
What do the civil authorities in our land do to a father that refuses to discipline and control his child? Hmm?
They spank him.
They spank the father, don't they?
That's right.
How do they spank the father? They remove the child from his custody. That's what they do.
That's right.
And that's exactly what Jesus did for us. He removed us from Satan's custody. We were in his custody. And he removed us from the spirit of bondage so we didn't have to again fear an unloving father like Satan. And we could voluntarily submit ourselves to a loving God who had our best interests at heart. Isn't that what Jesus did?
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about, on Abraham when God came to him and tested him.
Mm-hmm.
Take now your son, your only son, the son whom you love, and he tells him what he's going to do, what he has to do. And about 28 verbs later, verbs of action and obedience,
mm-hmm.
Abraham is there with a knife ready to take his son's life to burn him as a burnt offering. And a voice comes out of heaven and says, "Don't do it. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld your son, your only son, from me."
Do you know that the promise that God made to Abraham and to his seed after him was made because Abraham obeyed God?
Exactly. Right. He failed him a few times before, but in his old age, in his mature Christianity, Old Testament Christianity,
mm-hmm.
he'd come to find out clue was.
So if Abraham had to obey God, and Moses had to obey God, and David had to obey God, or suffer the consequences, and Jesus had to obey God,
exactly.
And Paul had to obey God, and all the disciples had to obey God, how about us?
Uh-huh. There's no loophole for us.
No loopholes, are there?
That's right.
That's why the beloved disciple John said, "This is the love of God, that you keep his commandments,
mm-hmm.
and they're not grievous."
And that's a theme, really, of the fear of God concepts in the book of Psalms,
mm-hmm.
or in Ecclesiastes. Fear God and keep His commandments. This is the all.
In fact, it says this is the whole duty of man.
That's right. Right.
Fear God and keep His commandments. How could we have missed it? It's so simple. How could we have missed it?
Well, sometimes it's by selective preaching on text.
Oh, I think we've got a lot of repenting to do, don't you think?
Well, we got a lot of consistent expository lessons of preaching that need to be done, text by text by text.
What would you say to pastors who are in terrible fear with their congregations, or broadcasters that are just scared spitless to even the very concept of teaching the fear of the Lord?
I would probably be brutal, and I would say, "What in the world do you mean to be like this? You've got someone. If someone called you to this, he wants you to fear him, and not to fear the people I've sent you to."
Mm.
And I probably would goad them about that.
You know, Jesus spoke to the religious leaders of his day, some of whom followed him afar off, and he said the reason they did it is because they loved the praises of men more than the praises of God. The other way of saying it is they feared man more than they feared God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And there are just those two poles in life today. And sadly, there's those two poles in the church. Of course, natural man does not fear God except in a negative way.
How so?
man fearing God in a negative way?
Yeah, natural
man. He's kind of like Adam in the garden.
Mm-hmm.
He runs to hide.
Well, isn't that the natural response when you've had a relationship, a good, warm, and loving, faithful relationship with your parent, and then all of it, or with anyone, actually, and then you defile that relationship by going against the values of that relationship and everything you hold dear? What are you going to do? Go running to the person and say, I love you, kissy-poo time?
You know, there are certain proper responses, but in Adam's case, it was an understandable response, but the problem was that fear drove him from God.
It sure, well, it did.
Yeah.
It drove him from God, and, you know, God had to create a whole plan. Of course, he understood that from the beginning of creation because he's God. He didn't ordain that men sin, but they did sin. He knew they would sin. And so he provided a means because he's loving. He's a father and he's loving. And friend, he's provided a means for you, too, to restore his fear in your heart. He really has. In fact, the prophet Malachi talks about this. He says, behold, I send my messenger, and he shall prepare the way before me, and the Lord whom you seek shall suddenly come to his temple. Even the messenger of the covenant whom you delight in, behold, he shall come, says the Lord of hosts. Now listen to these words, though. He says, but who may abide the day of his coming? In other words, it's going to be a terrifying day. All the prophets told about it as a terrifying time. Amos said it was a terrifying time. Joel said it was a terrifying time. Paul said it would be a terrifying time. He said, this is why we persuade men, because of the terror or fear of the Lord. This is why we do it. He said, but who may abide the day of his coming, and who shall stand when he appears? For he's like a refiner's fire, and he is going to purify. This is the God of the Bible. This is the real God of the Bible. The one who sent his only begotten Son in the fullness of time, not to condemn the world, but the world through him might be saved. But when he comes back, he's not coming to save people from their sins. He's coming to judge them in their sins. And that's why, friend, we need to have the fear of the Lord. Don't we, Arnold?
Yes. I don't even know where this is going to start in the pulpits. I don't even know if it's treated much in the seminaries.
Well, I don't think so, because it doesn't market well.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not going to enable people to build mega congregations instantly. Not going to tell people how to live their best life now.
But I'm sure that God is not in heaven wringing his hands about this. He probably got his plan. Of course, there's a church within a church. And all churches are true churches. Not all professors are true professors. But when it comes to the apple of his eye, the real Christian, the real church, there's problems there too. But they've got to get back to the preaching of the whole counsel of God and not pick and choose one's way down a lily path.
No question about it. Friend, I want to urge you to get a copy of Arnold's book, The Fear of God, A Forgotten Doctrine. Your gift of $15 or more to Save America Ministries will put it in your hands. It's going to help instill a whole new understanding of this whole concept of the fear of the Lord that covers the entire Word of God. We have got to restore the character and mind and heart of God from His viewpoint in our lives. Otherwise, we're self-deceived. We're deceiving ourselves. And we're setting ourselves up for massive deception in the end of the age. Jesus is coming. Soon we'll be coming home. People, get ready. Get a copy of the book. You get the $15 or more to Save America Ministries. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. Write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. And if you have not been walking in the fear of the Lord, repent. Ask God to instill the fear of the Lord in your heart. Remember, the secret of the Lord is with those that fear Him. And to them, and them only, He will reveal His covenant. Now, let me warm your heart with these words from Amazing Grace, America's favorite hymn. 'Twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear the hour I first believed. Thanks for joining us. Big thank you to you, Arnie, for joining us. And friend, I want to urge you to become a part.